The Blue Jays, the Colorado Rockies, are going to try to play some baseball tonight, but they're not going to start on time. Game was supposed to begin at 8:40 p.m. Eastern, but Denver is under a severe thunderstorm warning until 8:45 p.m. Eastern. The tarp is on the field. Rain is falling diagonally right now at Coors Field. The forecast for tomorrow, afternoon thunderstorms as well. So the Blue Jays and the Rockies hoping to get a game in tonight and hoping to get another game in tomorrow. But if they have to play two tomorrow, it appears as though they may run into the same problem. So what we do now is say goodbye to the pregame show, and we move into the rain delay program. And the rain delay program involves you and your phone calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We will check back in with Joe Siddle at Coors Field. If the rain delay goes long enough, we may check in with Shai Davidi, who is celebrating his birthday by watching it rain right now at Coors Field in Denver. And we'll probably hear from Orlando Hudson and may even play for you, our national audience, my conversation from earlier tonight on our local station with Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro. Ross Atkins was also on with Jamie Campbell. So we will get all kinds of audio in on this. As soon as we find out what time the game is going to start, if the game is going to start, and we assume that there's a good chance that it will, we will let you know. And we will, of course, get back to Denver for starting lineups and first pitch, and we won't miss a thing. But for now, it is the rain delay program, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Last night in New York, they had a rain delay of over 3 hours with two out in the ninth inning. And the game finished at about 3 a.m. local time in New York. We are hopeful that that same thing is not going to happen tonight. But again, as we talked about with Joe Siddle in the pregame, you can't push it back too far because these teams have a day game tomorrow. You don't want to start at 10 o'clock at night, have the game finish at 1:30 in the morning, and then come back and play again at 1 o'clock. So I imagine that this this rain delay is not going to go more than a couple or 3 hours before they decide to pack it in for the night. I said no hitter because I just looked down and noticed that Corey Kluber is pitching a no hitter right now for the Cleveland Indians on the St. Louis Bar and Grill out of town scoreboard. The Indians lead the Braves 2-0 in the top of the sixth. Kluber has gone 5 innings of no hitter. I tend not to get excited until the seventh, but the little alert is on, so they're getting excited anyway. 2-0 Indians over the Braves. This is the rain delay program. The Blue Jays and the Colorado Rockies are not officially in a rain delay yet because the first pitch isn't scheduled for another 6 minutes, but they're not starting on time. Let's go to the phones. Paul is in Hamilton. Hello, Paul.
Mike, I appreciate you taking my call. I always listen to your show.
Thank you.
And I would listen to the podcast tomorrow.
Wow, both?
That's awesome. Anyway, I just call. Actually, if you don't mind for 1 second, I just want to say hi to my kids. They're coming back with my wife in the car, Romano, Evangeline, Katarina. I hope you guys aren't sleeping. You can hear me. But anyway, I love you guys. And to my wife as well. I'll just call them because my wife and I are big fans of R.A. Dickey. And I just thought the fans, of course, as you know, it's your show. They're pretty rough on him. And if they could maybe watch the movie Knuckleball or maybe read his book, they'd understand what a quality individual he is. And some of the players are maybe more into their own self-promotion and are really quick to call themselves aces of staffs. And he's not that kind of a person. He lets his pitching, the quality of person he is, do the talking. And he doesn't need to call himself an ace of the staff. He just goes out there and does his job. And I think that it's strange, and it's a product of our society, that we're quick to get on a guy like that, who's a quality person, but cut so much slack sometimes to people who don't seem to be of his high standing. And that's really, I just thought it would be good if maybe the fans could cut him a bit more slack, maybe get to know him a little bit better and understand what type of a great person we have in our community as well as on the mound for our team.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
Have a great night, okay?
All right. Appreciate the public service announcement. And I'll say this. First of all, I'll tell you that it is hailing right now in Denver. Big chunks of hail falling on the field right now at Coors Field. As far as the R.A. Dickey thing, I'll say, well, multiple things about that. Yes, I believe people are too hard on R.A. Dickey. I believe it is because for some reason, people believe that it is a 50-50 proposition when R.A. Dickey pitches, that either he's going to be good or he's going to be awful. When and you know, you say, well, the knuckleball is so unpredictable. It is. It's unpredictable. But R.A. Dickey is like one of the two best people in the world at throwing it. And while it is an unpredictable thing, the truth of the matter is when you look over Dickey's career with the Blue Jays, it's he's really good 80% of the time, not 50% of the time. And he eats innings and he's, you know, his June to September numbers have been phenomenal for his entire career as a Blue Jay, including this year. I do recommend that people watch the movie Knuckleball. I do recommend that people read his book, Wherever I Wind Up. But I'll also say this. Quality of a person really doesn't excuse poor athletic performance. I mean, if you had a team of 25 John McDonalds, you would be, as far as quality of human being, it would never have been any better than that in the history of professional sports. And that team would finish in last place every year. R.A. Dickey, I agree with you. A quality guy. I think he's a fantastic person. I enjoy talking to him a great deal. But the fact that he's a great guy and he does terrific things in the community is not a reason to excuse poor performance. But his performance is not poor. And that's where the mess happens. That he gets climbed on despite being a good pitcher. A good pitcher. Better than average and throws 200 innings a year. That is a valuable piece. And I like you, don't believe that a lot of Blue Jays fans recognize that. It's a rough weather day in Denver. Hail on the field. The Blue Jays and Rockies about to go into an official rain delay. Jeremy is in Calgary. Welcome to the rain delay program, Jeremy.
Oh, Mr. Wilner, it's an honor. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. It is not.
We missed you in St. Mary's the other weekend.
Yeah, I would have loved to have been there. And I'd been planning on it for a long time. I was honored and thrilled to be asked by the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame to emcee the induction ceremonies. But unfortunately, I was really in bad shape on that Saturday. Yeah. So hopefully next year they'll ask me to come back.
What a great thing to do on induction weekend, take a trip up there. That was my first trip up there, but I never thought I'd actually see Dennis Martinez. Wow.
See, there you go.
Yeah,
and Pat Hankin and Howie Starkman, it had a nice little class there for you.
Yeah, Double A even had his name on a chair in there, but I didn't see him. Did get a picture with Mr. Beeston, though.
Nice.
One other thing. While I was walking around there, I had my Navin Field T-shirt on. Have you ever spent much time down there?
Navin Field?
Old Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, I went to one game. Navin Field was not Old Tiger Stadium, was it? I mean, just change the same site, but not the same building?
Right.
I went to one game at Old Tiger Stadium. A cousin of mine who lives in Detroit took me. I don't know. I was like probably 12, 14, something like that. I don't remember anything about the game at all. But yeah, I went there once, and it was very cool.
Are you familiar with the kind of story of the site lately, that it's just been kind of taken care of by a local group in the community down there?
Yeah, that home plate is still there at the corner of Michigan and Trumbull. And I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of what's going on with the city of Detroit and the site, but I do know it's still there.
Yeah, the field crew there, the Navy Field grounds crew, was managed by a guy named Tom Derry, a wonderful guy out of Detroit. But some unfortunate news for baseball fans in southern Ontario and in Michigan. But the field, the hallowed ground of that old baseball cathedral, was torn up yesterday.
What are they going to do with it?
Well, the city apparently sold it to the Police Athletic League for $1, and they're going to redevelop the site and put a turf field on there.
Well, that's too bad. Hopefully they keep home plate there, and you know what? It's good that it'll continue to be an athletic site, and they'll continue to play sports there. At least it's not a parking lot or something like that.
True. There's worse space for that site to be had, I guess. But it's a shame that those baselines and those pitcher's mound, the same pitcher's mound that Babe Ruth used to pitch at. But it's a shame to see it go.
Yeah, there are few and far between now. We have Fenway Park, where Babe Ruth used to pitch, and Wrigley Field. I don't think he pitched there, but he played there. Those old sites are fading away. That's the endless march of time. That's what happens. You can't do anything about it. By the way, I mentioned on the St. Louis Bar and Grill Out of Town scoreboard, Corey Kluber was pitching a no-hitter. He isn't anymore. Emilio Bonifacio broke it up with a leadoff. Oh, no, he didn't. Sorry, he got the second hit. Eric Ibar broke it up with an infield single. Then Emilio Bonifacio had a line drive clean hit to center field. And so Corey Kluber's not getting his no-hitter tonight. On the farm, the Buffalo Bisons have a 4-0 lead over the Louisville Bats in the bottom of the sixth inning, and Drew Hutchison is pitching a one-hitter with one walk and five strikeouts. I expect that we will see Drew Hutchison make one start in this next homestand that the Blue Jays are about to begin. It starts on Thursday. The Indians, Tigers, and Royals come in, 11 games in 11 days. I think we're going to see Hutchison come up and make one start, give everybody a breather during this homestand. And he's pitching awfully well tonight in Louisville against the Bats. We are now officially in a rain delay at Coors Field in Denver, and that means rain delay program. Taking your calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We will let you know as soon as we know when a start time is made or when they decide to pull the plug and play two tomorrow. A live look right now on Sportsnet shows the dugouts beginning to flood as it is pouring rain in Denver. This is, believe it or not, the third oldest stadium in the National League. Only Dodger Stadium and Wrigley Field have been around longer, but it's not 20 years old, Coors Field. I don't believe. Might be 21. Close, regardless. So I'm assuming that the drainage system is outstanding. I don't know how well you can drain hail, but the fact that it is teeming right now does not suggest that they're not going to be able to play if the weather improves. We shall see. Jason in North York. Hello, Jason.
How you doing, Mike?
Good. Welcome to the rain delay program.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk about Estrada and how awesome it is to watch a pitcher who's so consistent.
Pretty crazy, huh?
Yeah. Is it 14 starts?
12 in a row now. At least 12. 6 innings and no more than 5 hits. And it's not, I think we overuse the word consistent in sports. People say consistent when they mean really good. He's been really, really good.
Yeah. Even yesterday in the fifth inning when it was the play not made down the third baseline, you couldn't really pin that on him, but that kind of snowballed the inning. But it's been good to see. Another thing is I also appreciated to see the culture shift in the Blue Jays in the last 2 years, where I used to see a bunch of Yankees hats around. Now I see Blue Jays hats and Blue Jays jerseys, even when people aren't going to the game. I worked at the LCBO last year in Gravenhurst, and whenever people would come to my till, I would put the pennant there, the Blue Jays pennant, and then if they were there wearing a Yankee hat, I'd put on my Blue Jays hat. We'd have a good laugh, but as of last year, I saw a lot more Blue Jays stuff coming through than I ever had in years before, so it's good to see that shift.
It really is. It really is. Go ahead.
And I hope they take you on the road. I really appreciate hearing your calls of the game, so when you get a call. And that if the Jays get pulverized today, I hope everyone treats you with respect, much like Ruth did in the post game the other day.
Well, Ruth was just lovely.
She was wonderful.
Not because of the way she treated me, just because in general she was just lovely. Thank you, Jason.
No problem.
Appreciate the call, and keep taking it to those Yankee fans, although it is really something how much Blue Jay stuff there is out there now. It's really great to see. We're in a rain delay, a hail delay in Denver. No word yet on when this game will begin. Josh in London. Hello, Josh.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I continue to be well. How are you?
Awesome tonight. Just great.
Good.
I just wanted to talk to you about my favorite Blue Jay, Brett Cecil. We actually share the exact same birthday, July 2nd, 86, so we'll both be 30 years old this Saturday.
So do you have like an amazing curveball too?
I do not.
I'm sorry.
Play baseball.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I just want to ask you what you have heard about his rehab progress so far this year.
He is rehabbed. He's fine. He is completely healthy right now, and we're expecting that the Blue Jays will bring him back off the disabled list after one more outing in Buffalo, which may be tonight, maybe tomorrow, but he's expected to rejoin the Blue Jays on Thursday.
On Thursday, that's awesome. Because, you know, he was an all-star pitcher last year, and then this start of this season, I believe, he tied or set a major league record for consecutive scoreless innings.
In his first or second outing, I believe, I don't know if he did it last year. Let's take a look back here. No, his first outing, he didn't give up a run, and that was the outing in which he tied the record. 38 consecutive appearances without giving up an earned run. He and Craig Kimbrell share that major league record. And then he went on to tie a major league record with 5 losses in April. Brett Cecil didn't give up a run after Father's Day last year. And a lot of people believe that had Brett Cecil not gotten hurt, that torn calf muscle in the playoffs, that the Blue Jays would have beaten the Kansas City Royals. And he certainly would have given them a much, much better chance of getting it done. And they are going to be very happy to have Brett Cecil back. Hopefully it's the good, healthy Brett Cecil and not the Brett Cecil was having such a hard time in the month of April. Gregor Chisholm of MLB.com, who shares a birthday with Shai Davidi, which is today, so happy birthday to the two of them, just tweeted that the grounds crew is doing snow angels in the outfield right now at Coors Field in the hail. Daniel is in the Laurentians. Fancy. Welcome aboard, Daniel.
Less fancy if you actually was looking at the rain that I was looking at here.
It's not hailing, is it?
It's not hailing, no. Nothing extravagant like that. I have a couple of miscellaneous issues. First, let me congratulate you on your show. It's the best of the genre that I've ever heard at any time.
Oh, well, that is spectacularly nice of you. Thank you.
Well, it's sincere, but I also have some critical points to raise shortly.
I look forward to them.
Great. some miscellaneous issues. Hutchison, all last year I heard that he had such incredible luck getting so much run support.
It was amazing.
Actually, pardon?
The run support was incredible for him last year.
It was incredible, but I contend that there was nothing lucky about it. He was the weakest starting pitcher on the strongest hitting team that produced more runs, I think over 100 runs more than their nearest rival.
This is true.
And so by both his own manager's design and the opposing team's manager's design, he usually was squared off against the weakest starting pitchers in the league.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, if you really looked at it, and because I couldn't tell you off the top of my head who the opposition pitchers were.
No, I haven't actually, you know.
He was the opening day pitcher.
Yeah, but I don't think that reputation lasted long.
Well, it has nothing to do with reputation. It just has to do with the timing where you slot. I'm going to take a look. I would suggest that he was not usually facing the weakest pitcher on the other team.
Well, later in season, I would guess that was the case, but I certainly haven't verified it.
I'm going to try to look it up for you.
That would be great.
Yeah, I'm going to try.
Conversely, I think Estrada gets low run support because he very frequently, let's put it that way, is squared off against the aces of the opposing team.
I don't believe that to be true either.
You don't think that's true
either? No. I don't think that's true either.
Because you don't think he's considered the ace on the Blue Jays?
Well, no, but I don't think it's possible to plan your starting rotation for who you're going to face. I think that you're kind of stuck with the guy whose day it is, and you can't – it's impossible to put, well, this guy's pitching really well, so we're going to start this guy against him.
Well, I agree that you can't always do it, but if there's a day off, it gives a bit of flexibility.
I think in general, teams want their best pitcher going as often as possible, and whenever their day comes up, that's when their day comes up. Marco Estrada pitched against John Gray yesterday, right? His outing before that was against Patrick Corbin, who's nothing special. Jeremy Hellickson, who's nothing special.
Kevin
Gausman, who is hardly the Baltimore Orioles ace. Eduardo Rodriguez, who I think was just called up that day to make that start for Boston. Ivan Nova. I'm just going back in every start Marco Estrada's made. He faced Ivan Nova twice in a row. Irvin Santana, there you go. There's Minnesota's best pitcher pitching against Marco Estrada. But in a start before that, it was Colby Lewis, who's, you know, like the Rangers' third or fourth starter. So, there's just not that much flexibility in setting up a starting rotation that you can pick and choose your opponents.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry.
You're true to your reputation as a facts man. So.
That's what I do.
Another point, if I have time, someone called up a couple weeks ago about the WHIP, the walks and hits per inning.
Yes.
And he was making an analogy to the earned run average, and you cut him off quickly, and I think you might have missed his point. His point, if I understood it, was that there seems to be an inconsistency in the rationale for not counting runs as earned after a two-out error that would have been the third out, but counting walks and hits
I think that's why a lot of people like to look at runs allowed rather than earned runs allowed. It sort of takes the official scorer out of it. But you're responsible for all the runners you put on. I mean, if you removed
consistency, right, with the way the rationale for calculating earned runs. I mean,
but it's earned runs, right?
Pardon?
It's right in the thing, earned runs.
Well, it's a question of how you define earned run, right? I mean, a guy can give up two outs, then there's an error that would have been the third out.
Yeah, and then he
could give up 99 home runs in a row in that inning.
Theoretically, yes.
Of course, it would never happen, but that not a single one of those would count as an earned run, but they'd all count as hits, right? So,
but they are all hits, and they are all runs. They're just not earned runs
too.
Yeah. It's not earned.
Of how you define it, right? They're defining as unearned any run after the third out, but they're saying you are you aren't responsible for the runs, but you are responsible for the hits.
Right.
Okay.
Because it's not earned hits versus earned hits. It's not earned hits versus unearned hits. I think that the terms are pretty fairly and strictly defined, so I don't see the inconsistency.
True. One doesn't say earned or unearned hits, but there's some things somewhat unfair. I put it this way: two pitchers who were exactly identical, but behind one of them, third out was missed by an error, would have all these hits and walks charged to him that the other pitcher wouldn't have charged to him. So, you know,
the other pitcher after the error gets the next guy out, right? I mean, I understand the injustice. In the error made behind him, but I think ultimately a pitcher is responsible too for what happens after the error. You got to pick up your teammate, make good pitches, and try to get people out.
But not, but the runs aren't counted against him.
So right. In ERA, but want to look at somebody's runs allowed, if you want to look at somebody's, I don't know, the fielding independent stuff, that doesn't involve official scores decision. Don't get caught up in the fact that ERA is ERA. There are lots of metrics to measure a pitcher's value and what he's doing and how he's doing it. And I think the best course of action is to look at a whole bunch of different things.
True. And speaking of which, so here's another controversy. You and a lot of your fans always mention the 200 plus innings that Dickey pitches.
Yep.
I don't see why that's such a great virtue. I mean, it's like saying, look at this batter with a mediocre batting average, but hey, he had 500 at bats last year.
No, it isn't.
I mean, well,
it's okay, not. It's not at all the same.
Okay,
there's
not?
Because anyone can get 500 at bats, right? If you put a pencil a guy into the lineup every day, no matter how he does, it's going to take his 4 at-bats a day or whatever. Anyone can get 500 at-bats. You're not helping. You're not saving bullpens. You're not doing anything by getting 500 at-bats. In order to pitch 200 innings, you have to pitch pretty well. And you're doing a service by never missing a start, by taking heat off the bullpen, giving them a day of rest. Look, if R.A. Dickey was a terrible pitcher, then you're right. There's little value in him throwing 200 innings a year, but he throws 200.
He's a terrible pitcher, though.
I'm saying
he's a slightly above average pitcher.
Right, which means that there is great utility in the fact that he throws 200 innings a year, because not too many pitchers do.
All right, but there would be a lot greater utility in somebody who could only throw 140 innings.
No,
but through 140. Great innings.
Yeah, but then you need somebody to make another 15 starts. And how good's he going to be? And what's the balance there going to be? You're going to have somebody throw 140 great innings and then disappear, and then have a replacement level pitcher make another 12 to 15 starts to finish out that season. You're going to be a lot worse off than running out a guy who is slightly above average 32 times and having him throw 200 innings.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. We've spent a lot of time, and I've let you have a lot of time because it's a rain delay and we have a lot of time, but I want to get to some of the other callers. So thank you very much. I appreciate the good, honest questions, the disagreement without trying to pick a fight. Very nice. Thank you. The severe thunderstorm warning in Denver has been extended to 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. So we do not know when or if this game is going to start. We continue in our rain delay program, and we will take a short break. But before we do, let's get out to Coors Field and get an update from our eyes on the scene, Joe Siddle. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Michael.
Are they still making snow angels in the outfield, the grounds crew?
I have never seen anything like this. I really have not. The hail was coming down like a winter snowstorm. There's been all kinds of flooding, it looks like, in the tunnels. I think it was the Rockies side, their dugout, as you go down the steps and into the tunnel towards their clubhouse. It looked like the clubhouse attendants were trying to unplug the sewers in there, and it looked like all the clubhouse kids were coming and removing a lot of baseball bats and bags because that's where they were all stored, so they did not want the water to get in there. I have never seen it. There's still a lot of hail sitting all throughout the outfield, and it's basically a lake from the left field line in shallow left field all the way out to behind second base and then continues all the way throughout right field into the right field corner, and so much so that a lot of the hail, I think, has clumped together and actually formed patches of ice. It looks like you would see out on the lake in the middle of wintertime.
Is that going to make it easier? I mean, I was suggesting before that I don't know how well even a field with great drainage is going to be able to drain hail, but, I mean, you can just shovel it off now maybe.
Well, I think they'll probably get it in motion at least, and it'll melt because the temperatures, I think, are still pretty warm here. I don't see a temperature on the scoreboard right now, but it was 30, 31, I think, just before I came up here after batting practice, Celsius. But the water, it's just so much so fast, and we've all had storms at home where the water just, that you get so much in a hurry that the sewers just cannot handle it, and that's what I think happened here. And there was sewers down the right and left field lines, but also especially the ones in the dugout. The water was pouring into both dugouts, down the steps and into their rooms, and you could see the maintenance guys were trying to. They were actually kneeling on garbage pail lids, doing anything they could to reach down in the puddle because it looked so deep they couldn't see them, just to try to remove the grates of the sewers to allow that water to drain. But it's certainly a lot better right now. It is still raining as I'm speaking, but it's much different than it was, let's say, 20, 30 minutes ago.
But the severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect for another half hour, so there's a chance it might get worse again.
Yeah, it could. And I just looking at the field right now, I would say I cannot believe there's going to be baseball tonight. But I've said that before. And, you know, once this subsides a little bit and they do get going and those drains begin to work, I'm sure things can clean up in a hurry. But it's really an unbelievable scene. I really don't think I've seen a major league stadium look like it is right now with basically standing water from the left field line to the right field line in the shallow parts of the outfield and the deeper parts of all three fields. It's snow covered. It looks like a golf course in December after a snowstorm. It's hilarious.
That's unbelievable. All right. Well, we're still hopeful for baseball. They might need snowshoes or skates or whatever, but we'll check in with you a little bit later on. Hopefully there's enough fun stuff for you to do while you wait, Joe.
Will do, Michael. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. There's the latest update from Joe Siddall, who says again, he can't believe what he's seeing out there on the field. And a severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect for Denver for the next half hour. It was supposed to be over 20 minutes ago, but it has been extended, as has the rain delay. And again, when we find out whether or not we're going to have baseball and when, we will let you know. We'll continue to take your calls for a little while. We will intersperse some audio. We'll let you hear from Orlando Hudson at some point this hour if this rain delay continues all the way till 10 o'clock Eastern time. Phone lines are, well, one or two are open at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Quick break and then back with more rain delay program. Blue Jays and Rockies waiting on the hail. It's a Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. All 162 games right here on the home of Toronto Blue Jays baseball, the Sportsnet Radio Network.
The rains continue in Denver, though the hail has subsided. But the field has a ton of standing water on it. And a severe thunderstorm warning remains in effect for Denver for the next half hour or so. So no baseball for a while. We don't know if we're going to have baseball at all. We'll find out. The weather is no better tomorrow evening. So if the Blue Jays and Rockies have to play two, they may actually even have to move up the start time of the first game to noon local time instead of one if they want to get two games in. While we wait, we take your phone calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. 0590. And let's go to Mark in Scarborough. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Wilner. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Good. I'll get this part out of the way. I haven't always been a big fan of yours, Wilner, but I'm coming around to your shtick, and I'm liking what you're doing this season.
There's no shtick, but I appreciate it.
Well, we all have a shtick. What I was going to say is this year has been as frustrating as it has been exciting. I don't think, at least I'll speak for me, I didn't think the pitching was going to be as close to lights out as we've seen from the Jays in a long while. Obviously, we've got a little bit of a Stroman thing happening. But in general, I mean, I'm having the time of my life watching Happ and Sanchez and those guys.
And Marco Estrada, who's been better than anybody.
Yeah, don't forget Marco Estrada. Absolutely. I mean, I've been telling non-baseball fans, you got to watch this guy. I mean, this is baseball pitching at its absolutely finest, at least in Toronto. My point in calling was, my concern is we've got all of these batters, and we've been saying it for at least the last 3 years. There's really no hole in the lineup. There's, you know, the odd time go-ins and stuff like that. But I'm looking at this year, and I'm thinking back to especially the last 2 years where we had two pretty amazing streaks where we went, 11 and 12 games where we didn't lose.
Last year they had two 11-game winning streaks. Yeah, the year before, it was 2013 where they had another 11-game winning streak.
And obviously we know there's a huge amount of luck involved there, but there's just as much skill, if not more. And to say that it's symptomatic when a team has that kind of a run, I think it's a little foolish, but I think it stands for something. And, you know, you might argue, you know, a lot of people will argue pitching is a huge component of a team's ability to go long and go deep. And I don't dispute that. But I think for the Blue Jays, you know, whether it's their identity or whether it's just a reality, they are a heavy offensive presence. They command fear. Nobody can really pitch around them. And yet this year, that inconsistency related to the batting, not so much the bullpen. It's almost like the bullpen where you kind of know it's kind of a dud recently. But it's the offense that it sort of starts and then it sputters and it starts and it sputters. We haven't had that long route of wins, which all of a sudden in my mind, I'm thinking that is kind of symptomatic of something potentially. You know, do they not? So now I'm thinking about momentum, and momentum is a weird thing in baseball. You don't always carry a lot of momentum. You know, every game is a new game, it seems. And now we're looking at the season going, well, we're not having that big push of momentum where they're winning 7, 8, 9, 12 games. And we're really not getting, you know, 3 games of really good batting in a row. We've had a few bright points. And then you look, I know nobody likes the average as an indicator of a whole heck of a lot, but it still stands for something. And, you know, even Donaldson, what is he, 250 now? Bautista's always been kind of in the middle. But we don't have anybody other than Saunders, really, who's really consistently blowing it out of the water. And for me, you know, everybody's like, oh, I'll put, you know, Stroman down to AAA and Sanchez is going back to the bullpen and that'll fix everything. Well, it doesn't get anybody hitting with more consistency. So what do you do? I don't suggest we trade a single player in the starting roster. There's no point. These guys have just got to figure it out.
Yeah, and I appreciate the call and the theory. Donaldson's hitting .288 right now. You might have missed the hot streak that he's been on lately. But yeah, batting average doesn't count for much. The Blue Jays do have two guys with OPSs over 900 and another two with OPSs over 800. Edwin's closing in on 900. And Devin Travis is at 794 with his OPS after having a miserable start to his comeback season. But you're right. The Blue Jays have not had enough big offensive games this year. And that's been the missing component. And it's unexplainable because it is a team full of really good hitters. Russell Martin has struggled. Troy Tulowitzki has struggled, though both of them are hitting better lately. Saunders has been the one offensive pillar start to finish that really hasn't had much of a slump. But for me, that's all, you know, a positive going forward into the second half of the season in the final 84 games that hopefully starts tonight, is that these guys are bound to be better. Russ Martin's not going to hit 209 this year. Troy Tulowitzki's not going to hit 214 this year. Jose Bautista's not going to hit 230. Edwin's not going to hit 260. All these guys are bound to improve, and it has started, and we saw a lot of it over the run where the Blue Jays went 20-8 in 28 games. And I think there's a lot more to come. Mark Shapiro was on with us in the local hour prior to the network, and he said he doesn't feel like the Blue Jays have played their best this year. I certainly don't feel like the Blue Jays have played their best yet this year, and yet here they are a half game out of a playoff spot with the best one should expect to be yet to come. The rain delay continues in Denver, and we continue with the phones. Cliff's in Bradford. Hey, Cliff.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks.
Be nicer if they were playing ball.
Yeah, it would be nicer if there was a game going on, for sure.
My question is about basically the pitching coach down in Pittsburgh that basically worked with Jay Happ, and what did he change? He just has come back a different pitcher. He seems to work quicker than he did, if I remember, from a year ago or so. But was there anything specific? Did he change an arm angle, or was it just he saw something that he adjusted, or it's made quite a difference, whatever it was?
Jay Happ has changed quite a bit. You're right. I don't know if Ray Searidge gets all the credit for that. He only had him for 2 months, and I think there is a tendency for people to see coaches as potential miracle workers when they really aren't. Sometimes you find something and you tweak something. I mean, I remember when the Blue Jays had Jay Happ the first time around in spring in 2014, everyone was so excited because he changed his arm angle a little bit and that was going to change everything. I think that Jay has matured as a pitcher and he's kind of grown up a little bit and he started to know himself. I'm sure Ray Searidge contributed to that. I'm sure Russell Martin continues to contribute to it as well. But he's not the guy who would get ahead and then nibble, 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 nibble and be at like 85 pitches in the fourth inning. But again, I think that has more to do with Jay than it has to do with Ray Searidge.
How old is he?
I think he's 33.
Okay. So it's just maybe trusting his stuff more and is willing to throw it and let them try and hit it.
Yeah, and just
you say nibbling.
Yeah, growing up, you know, maturing is, and a lot of people say lefties do it late. Jay did it later than most, but just, you know, he's always been confident in his stuff, but it did look like he was trying to be too fine, maybe trying to be too cute and putting guys away, and he's not doing that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But if it was all Ray Searidge, then everyone who came through Pittsburgh would leave awesome, right?
Yeah, well, but you never know. Because I remember actually this going back, but I think when the Jays way back got Hanky, he was out of AAA and they almost, I won't say off the scrap heap, but all of a sudden he gelled into a better pitcher. And I don't know whether that, again, is pitching coach or was it just his time and his
Well,
place.
He was a pretty young guy too, right, when they got him. So very young, very raw. I think everyone saw the potential in him. And, you know, he managed to make it happen.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I always tend to say it's the players who do it. The coaches help. Coaches facilitate work, and they're an extra set of eyes, but it's the players who actually have to get that performance done.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate the call. Blue Jays are in a rain delay in Denver. Let's go to Bill in Mount Forest. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
I really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
And one thing I'd like to say is I enjoy watching the Blue Jays or listening to the Blue Jays if I'm out and about. And as far as this instant replay, I know they're talking about trying to speed up the game. What's your take on that?
Instant replay speeding up the game? Or just,
I know it's delay in the game.
Yeah, I would love to see them speed up instant replay. I would like it to be taken out of the manager's hands for one thing. I don't love the fact that when there's a close play, the manager has to say, "Hold up, let us get another look at it." I mean, I like the fact that they're allowed to take a look at it because you know, the whole point is getting the call right. And if you want to challenge a wrong call, you want to make sure that it's a wrong call. But I really believe that there should be an official up in the press box that when there is a close play, he just buzzes down onto the field and says, hold up, I'm going to take another look at this. And then he decides, after looking at it once or twice quickly, whether it needs further review, and then he should have 2 minutes to make a call. And if you can't make a call within 2 minutes, then the call on the field stands because obviously it's too close to call, and it's not an egregious mistake. So I think there should be a time limit on reviews, and I think it should be taken out of the manager's hands.
I like that idea, too. They should have a guy right there, right on the spot. And
yeah.
If they want to speed up the game, I think they could do it other ways, like the batter stepping out of the batter's box.
Well, they've gotten rid of that quite a bit.
Or the four pitch for the intentional walk, but that doesn't happen very often either. But
yeah, I think that's ridiculous. I don't think that's going to speed up the.
Once
it's going to take 40...
once or twice a game, maybe an average 1.5 game or something.
No, on average, less than once a game.
Do you know what the statistics are on the calls, the instant replay calls that are overturned one way or the other?
No. I don't.
They do seem to. A lot of them seem to get challenged, and then they are overturned. I don't know how much the percentage would be.
I think I read that it was about 60% get overturned, but again, I'm not sure exactly what the source was, and I don't know if that's right or not. So I probably shouldn't have said it on the radio.
Will they
I did hear that.
Do the ones that were done years ago, will they ever overturn any of them?
No, you can't do that. It's over. It's history. It's happened.
Because I remember that Jim Joyce took away the perfect game from that one pitcher.
Yep, Armando Galarraga.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know.
I hope they overturn that someday. I don't think it ever will.
I don't think you can. I mean, it would be great, but I don't think you can.
Because where would you draw the line?
Right.
Anyway, I really enjoy your program. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the call. And some crazy news from Denver right now. When we had Joe Siddle on at the top of the hour, you might have heard him mention that there was a flooding in the Rockies, the tunnel to the Rockies clubhouse. The flooding has now caused sewage to back up into the Rockies clubhouse. So it's getting kind of gross in Denver. And one wonders if that's a reason to not play baseball tonight. We'll find out. The rain delay is 40 minutes old right now. They are still under that severe thunderstorm warning in Denver. And if they play baseball, we will get you out to Coors Field. We'll get you out there anyway to check. Aha. Thanks to @CanOK or Can0K, who says that according to baseballsavant.mlb.com, which is a lovely website, 48.33% of calls have been overturned this year. There you go. Thank you, Twitter. Sometimes Twitter can be a force for good, if only it were so more often. It's the rain delay program. Rocky is in Markham. Hello, Rocky.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. It was an interesting interview you had with Mark Shapiro and I actually caught a little bit of Ross Atkins with Jamie Campbell on Sportsnet. And, you know, they were mentioning about Aaron Sanchez and, you know, the dilemma they have. Like, it makes sense for him to go in the bullpen. And, you know, the way he's pitched, at times he has been dominant. And Atkins mentioned that it is challenging to see what they do with Aaron Sanchez. It's a no-brainer. That Aaron Sanders should go to the bullpen because you want to look at him long-term wise rather than looking at him short-term because with his stature and with the way he pitches, and he's only going to get better as he gets older. When I watched that game against the Tigers, he reminded me of Justin Verlander himself and the way he dominated 12 strikeouts, 8-plus innings. Only gave up two runs and, you know, it's a great problem to have.
Yes, it is. Aaron Sanchez has been wonderful this year. And you want Aaron Sanchez in 2020, so he's got to go to the bullpen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, when you guys mentioned about Connor Green getting called up today, or just recently. A player that reminded me got called up last year, got promoted last year to AA was Jeff Hoffman. And a couple weeks later, he got traded for Troy Tulowitzki. Do you see a scenario like that where they do a package and go after a pitcher? Or do you think that he stays in the Jays farm system and make him develop and maybe he could pitch in the very near future, like in 2017 or beyond?
It all depends what they can get for him. Connor Green is the Blue Jays' top pitching prospect, and like you said, just got called up to Double A. That doesn't mean he's about to be traded like Jeff Hoffman was last year. But if the Blue Jays can get a Carlos Carrasco type of pitcher, and they can't get Carlos Carrasco because the Cleveland Indians are in first place right now, they're not trading from their starting rotation. But if they can get a very good pitcher who is under control for a long time, then yeah, Connor Green's probably a guy you'll deal. But they're not going to trade a Connor Green for someone who's going to be gone at the end of this season.
Which is very understandable because you don't want to give up players that they're going to be free agents after a season. A player that might come in my mind, I'm not sure they're willing to do it, is Sonny Gray. Like, he's under control till 2020. So I think the Red Sox are going to be on the radar for him. I think the Dodgers are, because I know that Jose Fernandez, I was reading that the Marlins won't keep him long term, but realistically, the way the Marlins are playing, they seem like they are contenders, and I think that he's most likely going to get dealt in the offseason rather during the season. So I think it just depends on how the cards are going to be played out, especially with the returns of Jose Bautista and Brett Cecil and possibly Franklin Morales. So I think this team is yet to show the promise, and I think there's going to be a winning streak like they showed in the last 3 years. So I think there's going to be positive signs to come.
Yeah, I think so too. Thank you, Thank you, Rocky, for the call. And we'll see if that involves a trade that that involves one of the Blue Jays' top prospects, like a Connor Green or a Richard Urania or a Sean Reed Foley or an Anthony Alford. We shall see. But again, it won't be for rentals. Those guys won't get moved for rentals. There's no David Price out there that you're willing to trade a Daniel Norris for when you know he's going to leave in 2 months. It's a rain delay in Denver. Back to the phones. Craig in Toronto. Hey, Craig.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Go ahead.
I just wanted to talk about the Blue Jays' attendance this year and how I've just been really impressed with it, especially it's not too long ago. You know, we were looking at crowds of like 15,000 on a Tuesday night.
Sure.
Yeah, it's been really good. I mean, I was there at the Arizona game last Tuesday, and it was like a packed house. I couldn't believe it, so that's awesome. And the fact that it's starting to get tickets now. But I just wanted to know if you've heard anything around the team about, you know, if obviously management must have noticed and if they're impressed with the fact that, you know, the fans are really doing their part, how that might translate to payroll and, you know, big picture. Are they looking and investing more in the Sky Dome, taking this money and investing it into the fan experience, things like that?
Well, we just had Mark Shapiro on from at about 2 hours ago on our local station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and we did actually talk about that.
No, I missed it.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to pull it up on the if you go to sportsnet.ca/590, the audio is there for you. But basically, he said, you know, making trades is about more than just money. It's about what you have to give up. He sort of didn't directly answer, is this boost in attendance going to result in an investment in payroll? He did talk about improving the fan experience, absolutely, at Rogers Center. But he doesn't determine what the payroll is. But I'll guarantee you that the high foreheads at Rogers have noticed and see the people coming to the ballpark, the money coming in, the ratings on television, and one hopes, really, really hopes, that it will lead to a greater investment in payroll going forward. Now, I don't know about this year. I don't, you know, the way it seems to me that Rogers works is that they set a budget for a year, and that's your budget for a year. And I know that the Blue Jays have left themselves some breathing room, much like they did last year, so that they were able to afford to add a David Price. So they've left some room in the payroll. They didn't spend to their limit. But I don't think that that payroll will be given a boost in season for the rest of this year. But you never know.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. And you can see that's ownership prerogative. I guess I was just more curious about, or just happy that this seems to be playing into the long-term health of the organization, and, you know, wondering if Eric Butch that, you know, ownership's been impressed or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, although we haven't heard anything officially from them. Thanks, Craig. And again, it only lasts as long as they're winning, right? If the Blue Jays all of a sudden do a teardown and a rebuild, we're going back to 15,000 a night on a Tuesday and maybe even 11. We'll see. Daryl in Toronto. Hey, Daryl. Welcome to the Rain Delay Program.
Thank you. Mike, first time calling. I listen to you constantly.
Oh,
the member
thank you.
Call. Figured there's no lineup tonight with this delay. You seem to actually not be cutting people off tonight, so.
Oh, we got lots of time. And you know what? The thing about it is there hasn't been a game, right? So there's nothing for people to get angry and irrational about.
Give it time.
Yeah, we'll see.
I want to know what you think about broadcast putting up the pitch tracker during a game.
I don't have a problem with it. I think it just adds more information.
Yeah, but isn't it undermining the refs? I mean, if the umps.
Umps.
Like, if they're gonna keep the umps, just stick with the umps. Because there's no margin of error given. You know, so people assume that the umps are always wrong when it shows they are.
Yeah, but they often are.
How accurate are they?
I don't know. I know they're quite accurate, but I don't know. Is it to within like a quarter of an inch? Is it to within an eighth of an inch? What is it?
I don't know
what the margin of error is.
They should give that info, or I would be upset as a ref, as an ump.
You're having a hard time with this ref ump thing.
I know.
They're human beings. I don't know that undermines them at all. The truth of the matter is I believe it is far too difficult for a human being to accurately call balls and strikes.
Agree. I'm on board with that. But until that time, pick one. You can't go to the digital one, the robot ump, if you're going to have humans making the actual calls. You know, pick one. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how many people feel the same way you do. You're certainly entitled to feel that way. I don't agree. I think the more information you have, the better.
Yeah. I just don't know how good that info is. That's all. If I was an ump, I'd probably hate it.
I'm sure they do.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thank you. We're going to step away. We've been in a rain delay for almost an hour in Denver. The severe thunderstorm watch, the severe thunderstorm warning is over now, scheduled to end at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. I haven't seen anything about it being extended. It is still raining, not nearly as hard, and we're going to see if we have baseball tonight. We will take the break. When we come back, we'll continue with the rain delay program. We'll hear from Orlando Hudson, a great conversation that I had with him last week that you're going to enjoy. And at the top of the hour, we'll check back and see how things are going at Coors Field. It is the Rain Delay Program, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. You're listening to the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Don't miss a pitch of Blue Jays baseball.
This is Russell Martin of the Toronto Blue Jays. You're listening to Blue Jays baseball on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Rain Delay Program. It is raining in Denver. Rain Delay is now in its 57th minute, and we have no word yet on if or when this game is going to get played. If it does, it's the Blue Jays, it's the Colorado Rockies, J-Hap, against Eddie Butler. If not, they will try to play two tomorrow, but we're supposed to have thunderstorms in Denver tomorrow evening as well, so they'll have to play early and quickly. We shall see. We take your calls now on our rain delay program. We have a couple of lines open, but before we get to the next call, I want you to hear a conversation that I had last week with Orlando Hudson, Blue Jays second baseman, for 4 years in the early part of this century, Gold Glove winner a couple of occasions, and a fantastic guy, so much fun to talk to, so much fun to listen to. He is trying to become a general manager in the major leagues of baseball. He's working in the front office with Dave Stewart. He is a special assistant right now to Dave Stewart, who is the GM of the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he was here when the Diamondbacks were here last week, and I got a chance to talk to him. Here's that conversation. You'll enjoy it. A great surprise to see the O-Dog here. Orlando Hudson, so many great memories of you with the Blue Jays out there at second base. You're here for the first time in a long time. How's it feel with the new-looking turf and the dirt in the infield?
Not a big fan of that. You know, love Toronto, man. Toronto's not about the dirt, man. It's about that turf. We were known for the turf. I think it should stay that way. Now we got the Tampa Bay Devil Rays look. I think we should have stayed the turf, especially the turf that we had when we played here when it was just full turf. It was unbelievable. Now with that mixture, with that dirt, different spins on the ball now. Now it's more tough on the infielders now.
I think you're the only one who doesn't like it. Looks like a real baseball field now, though.
Yeah, it does. But the look, it's okay to look, but the people that are looking at it are not playing on it. You know what I'm saying? Think about the guys who are actually playing on the field. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, definitely it looks good. But, you know, the playing surface will be a little different. You know, trust me, I came up in, you know, in this organization and playing Tampa all the time. You know, it was different, you know, playing that turf and dirt. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out.
Did it not beat the heck out of your legs playing on that turf all the time?
Oh, my goodness, man. Yes, yes. And hamstrings still bother me. You know, but it was fun. But it's definitely tough on your body, your ankles, your hamstrings. It is tough. That's why they made this type of turf, you know, and did the same thing in the NFL, you know, try to preserve guys' bodies and all that. But it's still turf, regardless of how you look at it, it's still turf. But this is what Toronto's known for, turf.
It's true. We're, like you said, one of only two ballparks.
Yeah.
At least it's not the carpet like they had back at the X in the early days here.
Yeah.
Can you imagine playing on a basketball court with a little thin strip of green on it?
A strip of green and concrete up under it. That was my first couple of years here. You know, it was tough. You know, diving for balls and all that. The balls bounced over your head and all that. But, you know, got to make an adjustment to it. But now they got to make a readjustment to it, to the new turf now.
The voice is unmistakable. It's Orlando Hudson, one of our favorites from way back in the early part of this century with the Blue Jays and before. Well, first of all, tell me about the job right now. You're wearing an Arizona Diamondbacks uniform. And I got to say, you're wearing the black top, so it's not that gray-on-gray pajama look. But well, what's the deal with you now?
Oh, man, right now I'm you know, doing a spring training. I work with the middle infielders all through the minor leagues and all that. But then I'm a special assistant to Dave Stewart, you know, the GM. It's a great, great job. You know, learn a lot from Dave. You know, he was here when I was here in the minor leagues, and he's like a father figure, you know. And I was just speaking earlier, you know, to the reporters, and I was talking about Gibbons. Gibbons is like another father figure, you know what I'm saying? You know, I grew up with two-parent home, but there was a father away from home, you know. Now I'm learning on the job, you know, being with Deshaun Watson and all those guys. We learn a lot, you know, up in the, you know, sitting up in the suite or the press box, however you want to call it. You know, having a chance to look at the game and study the game and see the game from the way others see the game. But Dave Stewart played the game. He's old school. You know what I'm saying? So we see the game the same. You know, the people who crush the numbers don't see the game the way we see it. But that's a part of the game that you have to learn, you know. And it's definitely great, you know, and watching our young talent. I can't wait to see this Travis kid play tonight, and heard a lot of great things about him. But it's fun. It's definitely fun, and still to be around the game. And I was blessed to play 11 and a half years in the big leagues and do some great things in the game and had some bad times in the game. But being in the major leagues is never bad at all, especially 11 and a half years of it. So now, you know, different side of the game, and I'm enjoying it.
Did you ever see yourself doing this post-career? Was this something that you thought you might get into?
It was, but people always thought, you know, talked about doing TV. But when my man Dave Stewart said, you know what, when you retire, you know, and I took a couple years off, enjoyed the family, and watched them grow up, and did a lot of fishing and hunting with the family, enjoyed them. And, you know, I said, you know what, now, you know, it's time now. You know, I'm ready to get back into the game. And they said, well, you know, oh, this is always home, and here I am.
This is the thing. I mean, for people like me who didn't play and for people who wind up in the broadcast booth, I think guys who played and then go on the radio or on TV kind of always want to get back in there because of the competition. There's no competition when we're broadcasting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's the camaraderie, there's the family, there's
yeah,
whatever, but there's not that going out there and winning. We don't win any ball games. You're in the front office. You can do something.
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. But it's tough, though, making decisions on this one and that one and trades and this one and that one and – you know what I mean? And then you look at it as one big family, and then all of a sudden one got to go to bring another piece in, you know. And, you know, I was one of those guys as a player, you know, watching players go and, you know, like, man, you know, you get close to a guy and all of a sudden he get released. And that's the nature of the business, though, you know. But being up in your business, man, you know, your guys don't release or trade nobody, you know. It's, you know, so it's different.
Well, we fire him. And,
and that's just it, you know. Yeah. But definitely, man, it's good stuff. It's a lot of fun, though, man. I'm really enjoying myself.
You talked about old school, and we know Dave Stewart's old school. You say you are, too, and the number crunchers. And when I started in this gig in Toronto, which was around the same time that you did, I was
hardcore numbers guy. But that's when the numbers weren't starting to, you know, people didn't understand even on base percentage back then and how important that was. As I've grown, I've seen from both sides. I believe the numbers are a great way to see things that you might not see with your eyes. But you mentioned Devin Travis. And here's an example. You can see him play second base today. Devin Travis is as fearless as anybody I've ever seen playing second base, trying to get a lead runner no matter where that ball is hit to him. And he's got such a great transfer and a quick throw. That's something that would never show up in a number.
Exactly. That's why I'm not a big fan of the numbers. I think, to me personally, I love the way that, you know, I mean, we got away from it. It's a new age game. Every sport has changed, not just baseball, and basketball, and football. Every sport has changed. And I always say this, and guys always say it too, the same way with every sport. I think ex-players should be GMs and all that kind of stuff, you know, because I would feel a lot comfortable. And other players say, and I'm not saying it's a negative way, never disrespect to no other GM, definitely not saying that. You know, if a guy like Dave Stewart, who played the game, understands and say, you know what, man, when I was pitching, I was 0-3 with a 10 ERA. You know how it is. I have some guy like Derek Jeter, the GM, and said, hey, man, I was in an 0-for-60 slump. You really worrying about this 2-for-10 slump, really? You know, they have guys who crunch the numbers and say, well, you're not, he's not going to hit this and not going to hit that. He can't do this. But it's a part of the game. So now we got to adjust to that part of the game. This is a new age game now. You know, you can't get mad at those guys because they made a wave for that type of game to be brought into the game, to sports these days, not just baseball, to every part of to every sport, major sport. But it's just part of it. But, you know, the old school way has found itself away from the game of every sport.
With Orlando Hudson. But on the other end of that, can't maybe an ex-player be a little too close to things? And maybe if you kind of, like Alex Anthopoulos, when he was here as a general manager, he said he always wants to separate emotion from every decision he makes.
Well, you have to.
Exactly. That can be tougher when you've been down in the trenches.
It can be tough. It can be tough when you've been down in the trenches. That's why, and you get close to guys. It happens. A part of it, man. You're going to get close to people. You know, it is what it is. But I understand where Anthopoulos is coming from with that. You know, you got to separate feelings because this is a business. You got to separate because if you don't, you won't make no trades. You'll feel bad about everything you do, you know, and you can't feel that way. But it's, I think it's, will the game ever go back to the way it used to be? No, it's too, every sport is too far gone now. You know, but we just got to adjust to the way they do numbers now. You know, the hitters got to do what they got to do. They see it and hit it and catch it and throw it. But they put wars in. They put I couldn't tell you what else they got in there. But it's in there. You know, and everything plays an important factor of that guy making a great living for his family. Either he go back to, you know, spend a year in the big leagues and go back to getting a regular job, you know. So
for me, it's just another way of looking at what's going on, and the more information you have, the better you are, right?
Exactly. That's where you look at it. More information, I mean, they're breaking down to the toenail from the eye to the eyebrow, you know? So, I mean, the more information you have, the better off it'll be.
With Orlando Hudson, let me ask you about your time here. I mean, you talked about the old carpet. You talked about how, well, I mean, the dirt is new, but, I mean, we remember you just killing it out at second base, doing things we hadn't seen since Roberto Alomar, and just playing the heck out of it, and you could swing the bat a little bit too. What are your best memories of being here?
Being here, man, driving to the yard every day was a blast. It was like home. This place in Arizona felt like home, you know. Really loved Toronto, great people, great city, great restaurants. You know, then we had great people on the field coaching. Man, it was just unbelievable. I mean, my first organization, and a lot of people don't get to make it to the bigs with their first organization. And I'm really glad Toronto, you know, then was Mike Russell, who's our head scouting director here in Arizona now, was my scout who drafted me then, you know. And, man, these are just great people. It was unbelievable, man, you know, just coming to the clubhouse and just playing a game of baseball in another country, you know, and just the colors of the uniform and the way the city embraced me when I first came here. It was just unbelievable. It's unspeakable, man. And I mean – I was hurt when they first traded me, you know, but it's a business, you know what I'm saying? And the trade ended up working out because I ended up doing some great things here in Arizona. But trust me, man, I always look at Toronto as home. You know, it's still another home for me.
And we always look at you as a Blue Jay, too, for sure. It's interesting that you – I mean, not interesting that you embraced Canada because everybody does. And I hope I get this right. You're a kid from South Carolina,
yes.
Right? Oh, good. Memory serves sometimes. Yeah, yeah. But to be drafted by a Canadian team, to be up here – after growing up down there, it's a huge change.
Huge shocker. Huge, huge, man. It was a total culture shock to me. You know, when I came here, man, I was like seeing interracial dating and different nationalities dating. And I'm like, whoa. I called my mom. I'm like, Mama, you will see white girls dating black guys and black guys dating Chinese and all that. back home, either you black or white, you stay on your side of the tracks, you stay on our side of the tracks, you know. I mean, it's gotten better, but pretty much it's still the same way, you know. But it's life, you know. Martin Luther King fought for it. And one day we can all, you know, walk hand in hand, black and white. At some points in time, we do it. 9/11, we walked in. Everybody came hand in hand. A month later, back to the same old nonsense. So it's like, seriously, is this what we're really about? But you know, this is, it may be, Canada's a great country. Toronto's a great city, you know. It's definitely totally different from South Carolina, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I always look at Toronto as home, and I thank the fans. I thank for the opportunity of drafting me and me making it to the big leagues and playing on the teams I played here. Had a chance to play in the, you know, in the great Rogers Center, and didn't have to play in OS Exhibition Stadium, which was good. You heard about that place. But, man, this is great. And finally get a chance to come back and see old friends. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too. As far as teammates who are here, who are the guys that you're still in touch with? Who are the guys that that you were the closest with when you were here?
Yeah, I'm still in touch with Vernon Wells all the time. Shannon Stewart, Carlos Delgado, Sean Green, Frank Calinato, Eric Hinsky, you know, yeah. And I talk to Gibby, talk to George Poulos all the time. So I keep in touch with a lot of the guys. A lot of the guys. We still stay in touch, we still talk, man. It's good stuff. Yeah, it's good stuff.
I know you've been talking, you do a couple of interviews here, and people ask you about what the AL East was like back then when Boston and the Yankees were so tough. But it's from another perspective. The Blue Jays, I mean, you just rhymed off some names and some serious baseball players. This team had a lot, there were a lot of years where you were really good, but just never good enough. How frustrating was that?
You know what, man? I don't want to say no disrespect to J.P. Ricciardi, but Dave Stewart had us right in the minor leagues. He had us right when he was here. He was here in the minor leagues, the head of the minor leagues, and he had, think about it, myself, Carpenter, Roy Halladay, Felipe Lopez, Cesar Torres, Michael Young, Kevin Escobar. I mean, we had it. And I'm probably missing about 10 more, you know, outstanding names, you know. And, you know, then they got rid of Dave Stewart. I mean, it seemed like we just went downhill, you know. No disrespect to J.P. Ricciardi. You know, he did what he could do, you know. But Dave Stewart, we had it right. I think if Dave Stewart would have stayed here, I think we have two World Series already. Added on to the two that Alomar brought here in 1992 and 1993.
It's sad that you brought up Michael Young. You made me a little bit sad because, you know, Young, that deal for Esteban Loaiza, that killed you guys at shortstop for a decade.
Man, you know how great Michael Young was? Unbelievable.
Did you play with him in the minors here?
Yes, I did play with Michael Young. All of us played together, man. All of us played together. We know we had a great minor league system. Number one. Had number one ranked minor league system. Got rid of Dave Stewart. That was it.
How do you, like, if you put yourself in that GM spot, you got to choose. You're going to deal Felipe Lopez or Michael Young or, can't remember who the third guy was. There was another one, and then there was Woody. Oh, Cesar Asturias. So you got one of those four guys, Michael Young, Felipe Lopez, Cesar Asturias. Those were the big prospects. Woody turned out to be a heck of a ball player too. But you got to deal one of them. How do you pick which one you're going to trade? They wound up dealing Young.
Yeah, they did. I don't know how he came up with that, man. That was just... It worked out for Texas, didn't it?
But would you have dealt Felipe instead or Asturias? They were both something, no?
I would have dealt neither three. I had to get rid of Chris Woodard and somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. I had to keep those three studs, you know?
But maybe Loaiza doesn't come here.
Yeah, then Loaiza doesn't come, you know? But I love Loaiza. Loaiza's a great teammate. Learned some things from him, too, but, you know, for being around the game for a while. Hadn't spoken to him in a long time. But Loaiza was a great, was a good one here, and old school guy. But, man, that hurt all of us when Michael Young was dealt.
Couple more questions, and thank you for all this time. This is great. People are going to love this. Gibby, you mentioned him as a father figure. I still, like I did in 02, take the calls on the post-game show, and after every two losses, it's get rid of Gibby. Fire Gibby. Gibby's a problem. Tell me what you think of Gibby.
Let me tell you something, man. They always sit there and say, but we can't fire the whole team, so you got to fire somebody. But there's only one more player's manager that I can sit there and say that I played for, and that's Bob Melvin of the A's, and I played from Arizona. Bob Melvin and John Gibbons are those two type of dudes that understand the game, know how to handle a team, and they're players' managers. They get rid of Gibby and bring somebody in, you'll see a different toll in the players. The players only can do what they can do when they're on the field. That's all Gibby can do is write the lineup out. But of course, he got to take the fall for it because he's the manager, right? The Blue Jays have a great team. You know, we saw what he done last year, you know, in the postseason. I think they can get back there. There's no doubt about that. You know, they definitely got the hitters in the lineup, you know. got some guys on the rotation that can throw that thing. Man, Gibby, don't let that kind of stuff bother him. You can yell at Gibby, fire me, fire him, fire this. Gibby don't belong, he does all that. He's going to laugh and talk, going to love his team, and he's going to have his team back in every corner, in every foxhole you can think of. That's the type of guy Gibby is. He's a God-fearing man, great family man. He's a great manager and a great player's manager.
That's a high praise indeed for Orlando Hudson. Last thing I want to ask you is, we were standing right here 14 years ago, and I had you and Carl Crawford interviewing each other, and it's the best 2 minutes of radio I ever did. You know, way back then, you asked Crawford, I'm sure you don't remember, but you asked him about Baldelli. Rocco Baldelli was the next big prospect, and Crawford said, Baldelli, I'll never forget this, Baldelli is the real deal Holyfield.
He did say that.
And it was something else. Carl Crawford just now finally looks like he's coming to the end of the road. Are you guys still close, and what do you think is going to happen?
Me and Crawford talk all the time, man. He, you know, we got to realize Crawford played hard, man. Stole a lot of bases and played hard in Tampa Bay on that turf. And it now you see the toll it's taking on him. And I had a chance to see it when I went to see us play in L.A. and me and him sat down and we talk. And my boy, yeah, he's hurting. But I think he can bounce back and give somebody else another good 2 years. It won't be every day. He's not the same Crawford as an everyday player. You know, he can give you 3 days a week, you know, maybe 4 days a week. But it's not going to be the stealing, you know, 40 bags. You know what I'm saying? Father Time catches up with everybody. He gave it all he had on the field. He didn't take plays and didn't take days off. You know what I'm saying? He played the game hard. He played the game the right way. You don't see guys stealing bases like that anymore. But Billy Hamilton's the only one, you know? Nobody stole bases that hard, that aggressive. Played outfield, diving and everything, that hard, that aggressive. You know, you just don't see it no more. Crawford was one of those guys that was just hard-nosed, you know what I'm saying? He came up in that upbringing, was hard-nosed and played football. Going to Nebraska as an option quarterback, so, you know, you can't be a little punk going there, you know what I'm saying? You can take some massive hits. But, yeah, he was that guy. But his body's taking a toll on him now. I feel bad for him. You know, I pray for him and all that, but we talk all the time.
Do you think when you look back, and I don't want to rip on Boston or anything, but, you know, it's a tough place at the best of times, right? Maybe it wasn't the right place for him. I mean, he didn't perform, but they turned on him as hard as I've ever seen anybody turn on anything.
Well, that's Boston. You know what I'm saying? They was almost going to do the same thing to Nomar, going to bring A-Rod in, wasn't it? So, you know, that's Boston. They want to win now. You know what I'm saying? If you don't perform, get out. You know, that's baseball. You know, Cardinals got the best fans in baseball. You know, they clap for everybody. You know what I'm saying? But Boston, New York, they want that win now. No, he didn't perform well. He didn't feel comfortable there. You know. God bless him. He got his money. But yeah, definitely, when he got the deal, was he that type of player to get that type of money? Of course, everybody would agree with that. Did his number short after he signed it? No, they didn't. We all see that. But yeah, Boston, they turned. But what you supposed to do? He wasn't doing well. You know, so you can expect that from anywhere. If he'd been in Philly, it'd be the same way. Philly was hard on McNabb, but Philly would let you know, we could talk trash about our players, but you can't peep from the outside and talk trash about our players, you know? And Boston was the same way. Okay, now, we could talk about Crawford, but we're not going to let no Mets fans come in here and talk about my player. You know what I'm saying? But and that's understandable. That's a part of the sports world.
Orlando Hudson, appreciate all this time. So great to catch up with you. Best of luck, and I'm hoping one day we'll do this with you being a GM.
Hey, you never know. We'll see. Hopefully. Anything can happen. Anything's crazy in the game. But right now I'm taking all the knowledge I can, you know, from Mr. Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart and Deshaun Watson, just learning all that I can, you know, because the game is getting younger and younger. And, you know, by that time, yeah, a bunch of young bucks be up here. If I be a GM, I be. If I don't, I'm loving the position. I'm thankful for the position I'm in right now.
There he is, Orlando Hudson. And what a treat to listen to. He's got a lot to say, very confident in his opinions, and it just brings back memories of that Blue Jays team in the early part of the 2000s with Hudson and Frank Catalanato and Carlos Delgado and Roy Halladay and Chris Carpenter and Kelvin Escobar and all that stuff. And Michael Young. We had to talk a little bit about Michael Young. It is still raining in Denver. We have no word on when or if this game is going to start. It's not even 8 o'clock yet, though, in Denver. It's coming up on 8 o'clock. So it's not like we're getting to the point where it's crazy late to try to get a game in. The Jays and Rockies are supposed to play a day game tomorrow, and we'll see. We'll check in at the ballpark shortly, but we're still rain delay programming it up and taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. So let's go back to the phones. John in Whitby, thanks for holding, John. I hope you enjoyed Orlando Hudson.
Oh, hi, Mike. Yeah, that was quite a great interview. It made me, a couple of questions came to mind in listening to it. And one is, it was interesting hearing what he had to say about coming from North Carolina up to Toronto.
South Carolina, but yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, do you think kids, that when we draft them out of high school now and out of college, do they still think they're coming to Mars when they come to Toronto? I mean, it's like, it's not that different.
But they don't know that. I mean, yeah. I do think a lot of the American kids have no idea. No
really?
Idea what Canada's like, no idea what Toronto's like, no clue at all.
Really? Yeah.
Most of them have never been here.
Hey, okay.
And it's a very insular society south of the border in a lot of ways.
Yeah, true. That's true, I guess. And the other thing, I've got an idea for the Jays starting rotation, and you might think I'm crazy, but I'll pass it by anyway. What about Sanchez and Stroman? You've got Estrada, you've got Happ, you've got Dickey. Okay, now we've got to reduce the innings for Sanchez, and it looks like for Stroman too. He's not that much different in terms of innings pitched
than
Sanchez.
Yeah, no, he is. Stroman's innings don't need to be reduced.
Who, Stroman's?
Yeah.
Oh, because I was thinking, what if you made Sanchez and Stroman your fourth starter, four innings each. That way you serve both purposes if Stroman needed to reduce his innings.
Then who's your fifth starter?
Hutchison.
And who's your sixth when somebody gets hurt?
Well,
not
don't
if.
We have another guy down there in AAA that we could bring up?
Not There's that one. You could rely on to pitch in the major leagues, and I'm not sure that you can rely on Drew Hutchison to pitch in the major leagues. He had an ERA of 5.5 last year.
Well, yeah, but he's still a major league pitcher.
I think he's a major league pitcher, but again, he had an ERA of 5.5 last year. I think a lot of people have forgotten that.
Well, he's doing okay.
Yeah, it's Buffalo.
Yeah, I know.
It's not the major league.
Yeah, true enough. Hey, one last thing that came up in that interview. Is there still any chance we're going to get grass at the Rogers Center?
I don't know. It seems to be put on the far back burner right now.
Yeah.
They're happy with the dirt infield.
Yeah.
I think that is pretty low on Mark Shapiro's priority list.
Yeah. And what's that turf like? What's that newer turf like? Is it better than Orlando was describing in the interview, like back in the day?
In the day you were basically playing on concrete.
Yeah, right. But is it still really hard in their knees and everything, this stuff?
It's not easy on the joints, but it's easier than it was. It's pretty soft to walk on, but you know, to talk to the guys who play on it, it's much better the last couple of years than it was before. It's not a major, major, major issue where you got to be afraid of the turf and keep guys off of it like it used to be. But I do think grass is very definitely a back burner issue right now for the improvements at Rogers Center. Thanks for the call. Let's get an update from Colorado. Let's head out to Denver and Coors Field. We are in minute number 81 of our rain delay so far tonight. Joe Siddle joins us live from the ballpark. Joe, an hour ago you said you've never seen anything like this. What's going on now?
Well, things look a little bit better, Mike. Still some lingering showers apparently in the distance in behind the system that just went through, but the tarp is still on the field and it's full of water, and they are working profusely. A lot of guys out there, a lot of people with their squeegees, what they're doing is trying to squeegee a lot of the water off as well as the hail. So a lot of this hail has still collected. So there's a lot of shovels shoveling up that hail. They're putting it into the tractor and removing it. So it looks to me like what they're going to do is try to get all the water and hail off the tarp. I would imagine then remove the tarp, but the outfield looks much better than it did when we last spoke. The puddles are gone. There are still little patches of hail piles, but they're removing them. So I think the drainage is slowly working right now, and I'm sure it's going to take some more time. I was just over in the Rockies TV booth. Jeff Houston, who played for the Expos way back when, in one of my first big league camps, he was an Expo. So we go way back, and I talked to him about this, and he said, you know, they haven't seen this for quite some time. He really thinks that we could probably play baseball in about an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes from right now. So we'll see how that goes, depending on how much comes in this little bit that is trailing the system right here. But more than anything, is that it's a good sign that they are removing the water and the hail from the field.
Yeah, that does sound really good. And it would be great if there could be baseball tonight. If they start in an hour and 15 minutes, that's 9:15 local time. You're going to be done just after midnight and back for a day game tomorrow. That's going to be tough sledding, but not crazy. But let me ask you about what's going on downstairs right now. And I assume you've heard that the flooding in the Rockies clubhouse has caused a backup. And now there is sewage flowing into the Rockies clubhouse. As far as that kind of thing goes, I mean, I know players want to go back and forth throughout the game and they use the clubhouse during the game, but to have your clubhouse full of raw sewage, does that affect, you know, are they going to say, well, screw this, we're just going to go home if we can't use the clubhouse?
Well, you know, I did see a lot of the pictures, some of the videos while this was all going on. I haven't heard any more from down there. You've probably even heard more than I have. But one thing I did hear is about that kind of issue. When you have a sewage issue and if things are backing up, now you just wonder about the whole health and safety thing. I don't know right. how that works around here. But that could certainly be a concern. I have not heard anything about that just yet. And I think more than anything, what I'm seeing is that they're working on the field and removing the water and the hail is probably the best sign. So hopefully those issues down in the tunnel are being taken care of.
Hopefully, indeed. All right, thanks, Joe. Let us know when if you find anything out. We're here. Joe Siddall at Coors Field. As we wait, and a good sign from what Joe says, is that Jeff Hewson, no relation to Canadian broadcaster Jim Hewson. Jeff Hewson is H-U-S-O-N, not H-U-G-H-S-O-N. But Jeff Hewson, the Rockies broadcaster, suggesting that there could be baseball within the next hour, 15 minutes. And if we do get an official start time, we will pass it along. While we wait, we will continue to take your phone calls on the rain delay program at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Josh Goldberg is waiting to take your calls. And if he likes you, he'll put you on the air. Before we take a quick break, let's just take a look at the St. Louis Bar and Grill out-of-town scoreboard. They're in a rain delay in Washington as well, but the tarp has come off the field. The Nationals leading the New York Mets 1-0 as they play, or as they wait, in the bottom of the fourth inning. Anthony Rendon with an RBI triple for that game's only run. Top of the ninth inning in Tampa Bay, and the Rays snapped a 12-game losing streak yesterday with a big win over Boston, but they're back at it tonight, trailing the Red Sox 6-2 as they play in the top of the ninth inning. And Dana Evelyn is now on to pitch, which is not quite a white flag, but it's not a white flag. Travis Shaw has homered for the Red Sox, and Brad Miller has gone deep for the Tampas. The Detroit Tigers leading the Miami Marlins 7-5 as they play in the top of the ninth inning. Francisco Rodriguez has come on to try to close it out. The Tigers scored 7 runs in the bottom of the fifth. Jose Iglesias, Miguel Cabrera, and Nick Castellanos all with home runs in that inning. Iglesias and Castellanos' homers were 2-run shots. Miggy's was a 3-run shot. The Tigers have been out-hit 16-9. They have out-errored the Marlins 3-0, but on the strength of that 7-run inning, they have a 7-5 lead. Minnesota Twins leading the Chicago White Sox 4-0. That game is in the top of the seventh inning. Brian Dozier has 2 home runs and all 4 RBIs for the Twins off of Jose Quintana. For Minnesota, it's Kyle Gibson on the hill throwing the 4-hit shutout to this point. Interleague St. Louis over Kansas City 8-4. That game is in the bottom of the sixth inning. It was Yordano Ventura on the hill for the Royals, who gave up 7 runs on 7 hits in 5 1/3 innings with 3 walks. Matt Carpenter had his 14th home run. It was a solo shot. He also smacked an RBI double in the top of the sixth inning. And what else we got? The Dodgers leading Milwaukee 6-2. That game is in the top of the sixth inning at Miller Park. Adrian Gonzalez has an RBI double. Jock Peterson has an RBI single in that game, as does Julio Urias, the pitcher for the Dodgers. So that's kind of cool. The Brewers have just 1 hit in the game. It is a 2-run double by Ryan Braun. That came in the third inning. So it's top of the sixth, and it's 6-2 Dodgers over the Brewers. Phillies and Diamondbacks just underway. It's nothing-nothing in the top of the second inning, top of the 10th inning in Cincinnati. The Cubs and Reds are tied 2-2. Ben Zobrist has his 10th home run for the Cubs. Billy Hamilton has his third for the Reds. And the Cubs are rallying here with two out. They have two on and Chris Bryant at the plate. Again, a 2-2 tie, Cubs and Reds in the top of the 10th. And earlier today, the Texas Rangers beat the New York Yankees by a score of 7-1. Cole Hamels, seven innings of six-hit shutout. Adrian Beltre with his 11th home run of the season. And the Cleveland Indians took down the Atlanta Braves 5-3, the final score in that game. Jace Peterson with the only home run of the ball game. That for the Braves, but the Indians have won now 12 in a row. And in the minor leagues, the Buffalo Bisons beat Louisville 6-0, a combined two-hitter for Drew Hutchison, Franklin Morales, Brett Cecil, and Chad Jurado. Cecil making what is likely his last rehab appearance through a perfect eighth inning, got three fly balls, 11 pitches, eight strikes. Hutchison, six innings of one-hit shutout, two walks, and five strikeouts to improve to 6-3. For the Bisons and lower his ERA to 2.78. And again, I do expect that we will be seeing some Drew Hutchison at some point in the Blue Jays homestand that begins on Thursday and carries through until the All-Star break. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. The rain delay program continues. We'll take more of your phone calls next. It is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Baseball Control in Toronto. Mike Wilner here with you. We've gone from pre-game show to pre-game show to rain delay program. And we are in hour number four of our broadcast evening right now. And thank you for being with us and for sticking with us. We hope to bring you baseball at some point in time tonight, hopefully within the next hour. And we don't know whether that's going to happen or not. But as soon as we know, we will let you know. And until we know, and even beyond when we know, we will continue to take your phone calls here at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Later in this hour, we'll hear from Mark Shapiro, who was on the pre-game show almost 3 hours ago. I'm assuming we have an entirely different audience right now, and at least a national audience. It didn't get to hear it the first time, so we'll have that for you. But right now, back to the phones. A lot of people have been waiting very patiently, and we appreciate it. Kevin is in Guelph, and you're up. Welcome aboard.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'm a first-time caller.
Good to have you.
And I just want to know about the status of Dalton Pompey. Is he... Is he back playing yet, or is he still recovering from the concussion?
I believe he is still on the disabled list in Buffalo, recovering from that concussion. He didn't play tonight. Melky Mesa is still on the team. So it suggests to me that Pompey is still on the DL, fighting the effects of that concussion. And that's good. You know, you don't want to rush him back from something like that.
Now, what about Anthony Alford? Is he still on DL, or is he playing now?
No, I believe he's still on the DL as well with the same concussion issue. I mean, his was way worse than Dalton Pompey's. He was unconscious on the field for a good 15 minutes when he played. But let's take a look for you here. I believe, I don't want to say anything with 1,000% certainty, but I believe, yes, that he is. Let me find out for sure. Give me 1 second here. He has not played since. Oh, no, he's back. What do you know? Anthony Alford's back. He's been back for 5 days.
Wow.
He is two for 20 since coming back. But yeah, he's back in the lineup. He's played the last 5 days.
That's good to hear. Do you think he would he'd be a September call up or
absolutely not?
Not.
Yeah. No, he's an A ball.
Yeah,
he's 21 years old. This is his second season just playing baseball.
Oh, okay.
Being just committed to baseball, so no, he's not coming up.
Oh, okay, so do you think they bring him up to Double A this year or not?
If he forces his way there, yeah, I think they'd be very happy to have him be in Dunedin all year. I mean, it's June. And he's only played 38 games because of the concussion and the knee injury before that. So this is not a Blue Jays front office that believes in rushing players. If Alfred gets to be too good for the level, they'll move him up. But I wouldn't bet on it.
So does Michael Saunders have a contract beyond this year, or is he a free agent?
He's a free agent.
Oh, okay. So possibly you could have two outfield spots opening up next year.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Possibly a lot of spots opening up. Blue Jays have 10 free agents at least after this season. By the way, the tarp is coming off the field right now in Colorado, so that's great news. Baseball may well be afoot in Denver. Still going to take a while, but tarp's coming off the field, and that's outstanding news. As far as the Blue Jays pending free agents, well, there's R.A. Dickey, Brett Cecil, Jason Grilley, Drew Storen, Gavin Floyd, Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, Michael Saunders, Darwin Barney, Justin Smoke, Josh Tolley, that's 11. Not 100% sure about Jesse Chavez, but at least 11 pending free agents for the Blue Jays. So it's going to be a lot more than just two outfield spots open. We shall see. Brian is in Scarborough. Hey, Brian, you're on the rain delay program.
Thanks, bud. I've been a long time listener. I wanted to know about Gold Glove and Silver Slugger and who decides on that.
The Gold Gloves are voted on by managers and coaches.
Okay.
And I don't know who votes for Silver Sluggers. It's not.
Is there more than one Gold Glove? Or is it just one guy every year?
One guy per league, per position every year.
Okay. And the Slugger thing, is that decided by managers again?
I don't believe so. I'm going to look that one up for you because I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, the Silver Slugger to me has never been that much of a big deal. So I don't think I've ever bothered finding out who votes for it, but I will find out for you and let you know.
Is something that's pertinent to a guy's contract?
No.
No, okay.
No, awards tend not to be. I mean, some guys have, incentive clauses in their contracts to suggest, well, if you win an MVP, you get an extra $100,000 or $250,000 or whatever. But when you negotiate a contract, hey, I won the MVP, that's something, but
would be Donaldson.
Yeah, the overall numbers that you put up and all that other stuff probably means a little bit more.
No, but a lot of the broadcasters you hear, they say, oh, yeah, he's a Gold Glove winner.
He is. Yeah, right? that's a thing.
They're special.
Well, anytime you win an award, you're special. The Silver Sluggers are actually voted on by coaches and managers as well. So there you go. Gold Glove and Silver Slugger, the same thing. Same people vote for them.
All right, but there's only one per season?
Well, you already asked me that. I told you there's one per position per league.
per league. I apologize.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the call. Yeah, awards are swell. And, you know, we're going to point out when people win awards because that's a cool thing, as it should be. It's really not worth much, though, to be honest with you. Gold gloves depend more on reputation than on ability, A, and two, they often depend on your offense. A lot of times you can't win a gold glove unless you're a good offensive player. John McDonald doesn't have a gold glove. I have not seen many better defenders than John McDonald. But he just wasn't a good enough hitter to win a gold glove. Ron is in Oshawa. Hello, Ron.
Hello. Yeah, on that note there, I wish there was something that would show, like, Troy Tulowitzki has the best feet I've ever seen for a shortstop. He does that little, when he goes towards second base, he does that little turn and throws the first. Now, Tony Fernandez would just keep on running the same way and flip it. I'd love to see the timing of each play from the ball in the glove to the first base. Which way was better? Do they do anything like that?
I don't know that you bother looking up what Tony Fernandez did, but, you know, with StatCast now, you can absolutely take everything about everything that a defender does and measure it and time it and all that stuff. But I think, you know, as long as they're both effective, that's the only thing that really matters.
Okay, great. And what I called about is a couple of months ago, I talked to you about bunting. And it was Gibby played the corners in the second inning with Madison Baumgartner on deck, right? And you said it was definitely a bunting situation, right? So I just wanted to look up the numbers, right?
I said something was definitely a bunting situation in the second inning?
Yeah, you actually said that's absolutely a bunting situation with Madison Baumgartner on deck in the second inning.
I'm very surprised that I would say something like that.
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering about, the numbers of bunting. Like, at that time, Baumgartner was striking out 45% of the time, right? And, you know, he was hitting 190, so there's 64% out of 100. So there's 36 outs left out of 100. How many of them are actually productive outs? That's not only that situation. I'm just trying to understand when is a good time to bunt is.
A good time to bunt is when you have a terrible hitter at the plate and when you have runners on base and ideally when you have less than two outs. That's a good time to bunt. By terrible hitter, I mean like a pitcher. And so I'm looking back at that game in San Francisco right now. So it was second and third, nobody out.
No. A runner on first, nobody out.
No. So it was before Baumgartner, with Baumgartner on deck.
Baumgartner on deck. Eighth hitter was hitting 265 or something like
that. Gregor Blanco. Yeah, that's not a good bunting situation. That's a terrible bunting situation.
But he had the infielders in, and then I said that to you. I said, I thought that was crazy. And you, I said, oh, absolutely, that wasn't a bad play. So I was just wondering about that.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true.
And there was a play last year for, like, I'm wondering if managers have, like, someone on the bench telling them, because the game might come too quick to them, right? Miller was pitching for the Yankees. Pompey was on first. 1-0 count. Pompey stole second base. On that pitch, it went 1-1, right? So you have Ben Revere up against Miller there. And I couldn't understand for the life of me why they didn't have Ben Revere bunt in that situation. They were down by a run. This was the ninth inning. And I didn't understand why they didn't bunt then.
Well, again, you're bringing up a game from last August or September. So you'll forgive me if I'm not 100% clear on the details and skeptical that you're 100% clear on the details. But Ben Revere is one of the best contact hitters in the major leagues. And so when you have a great contact hitter, then the odds of you making a productive out go way up because you're very, very unlikely to strike out. Ben Revere is not a fly ball guy, right? Not a lot of power. He doesn't hit the ball very far very often. So when you have Ben Revere at the plate, he's very likely to hit the ball into the ground with great speed. Dalton Pompey with great speed on base. So you might as well let him swing away. I would never ask Ben Revere, almost never ask Ben Revere to sacrifice bunt just because he's such a good contact hitter.
That's what I mean, but I don't think people are actually Miller is probably striking at 45% of left-handers he faced in the last 3 years. I would have to say almost unhittable.
That's just a guess.
I'm saying people don't look at the exact percentages of what's going on and do what's right. That's what I'm wondering if there's anybody that does that for a major league team and says, hey, you know, Miller strikes at 50%, contact rate is this, you have to bunt in this situation.
Yes, there is. The major league, the coaches, the managers have all that information and have the exact information on hand all the time. They do a lot of studying. They do a lot of work. They have it on, loaded onto an iPad in the dugout. Yes, they have all that information. Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Ron. Appreciate it. Want to try to get some more people. We have a start time for the game tonight. It will start in 55 minutes, 11:20 Eastern Time, 9:20 local time in Denver. The Blue Jays and the Colorado Rockies will get underway. So they need an hour to prep the field from this point almost. There will be baseball tonight in Denver, and that is great news. It'll be Jay Happ against Eddie Butler. If it starts at 11:20 p.m. Eastern Time, it will have been a 2-hour and 40-minute rain delay prior to the beginning of this game. We will continue to take your phone calls up to the start of the game, and at 10:40 Eastern Time, we will have Mark Shapiro for you, our conversation from earlier tonight, a chance for you to hear the Blue Jays club president answer questions that were called in prior to the interview from you, the fans. Jeff in Toronto, you're up next on the Rain Delay program. Hey, Jeff.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I got to say, it's awfully nice of you to serve as a proxy for people to use Google this evening. Some people might be better served just, you know, sitting down at a computer. But anyway,
what are you going to do?
I've listened to you quite a bit. I wanted to ask you about Pete Rose. I've never heard your take on whether Pete Rose should be, you know, brought back into the baseball family or what have you.
I think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, yes.
Because it really, I think there was a Super Bowl commercial this year he did for Bodog or something like that, and it's just like he's not really helping his case by doing stuff like that, and you just wish the guy would, I don't know, he's had some missteps that make me hesitant to kind of really get on board for him being back in.
Well, look, the truth of the matter is nobody has more hits than Pete Rose ever had, and the Baseball Hall of Fame is supposed to be a museum of baseball history, and I think it should be, and I think Pete Rose belongs in there with a plaque that says banned for life, Major League Baseball, for gambling on games.
Yeah.
I think that Mark McGwire, that Barry Bonds, that Roger Clemens should be in there.
I imagine you'd have Shoeless Joe.
Absolutely.
In there as well, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think before you put Pete Rose in, you got to put Shoeless Joe in. Put him at the same time, maybe.
Okay. Fine with me.
Anyway.
All right.
Hopefully the game gives us something to talk about.
Yeah. I don't know that we're going to have a good long Blue Jays talk after the game, but we've had plenty of time here before the game. But yeah, I have no problem with Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Mark McGwire, any of those guys in the Hall of Fame. It's a museum of baseball history. It's not a place where we only talk about happy things. And it should be on their plaques. This is what they done did. Clint is in Newmarket. Hey, Clint, you're on the Rain Delay program.
Hello, Mr. Wellner, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you, sir. And yes, they done did well, so they should all be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, done did.
I'm calling you because I think Mr. Dickey, Robert Allen Dickey's got a bad rap over this season and last season. He's everybody's got this Noah Syndergaard in their mind, and rightly so, because he's an amazing pitcher. But I think with Mr. Dickey, I see he has a few good innings, and he's solid. And it seems like there's always just that one inning that just comes out of the blue.
Yeah, but sometimes it's the first.
Yeah, that's correct. It's the first. It could be the second, the third, the fourth, or fifth.
Yep.
But the thing I'm just trying to say is, I don't know if you remember it all, but when exactly, because I remember this from just watching the movie Knuckleball recently, the documentary,
uh-huh.
And it was excellent. And I'm trying to download Fastball now. I really should just buy it, but anyways, that's besides the point. When did Tim Wickfield get put into the bullpen? Was that like halfway through Boston's season there when they were having a good season? And, you know, he had a couple bad starts, it showed in the movie, and then the manager decided to throw him in the bullpen. And then he pitched really well for a while. Like, so I'm just thinking, if Dickey moves to the bullpen instead of Sanchez, I think it'd be more solid for the team. Because
Sanchez is going to the bullpen.
I know that, and I know it's not going to happen for Dickey to go to the bullpen. But I'm just saying, like, from taking that point from Boston there, like, because
your point was that Wakefield wasn't pitching well. Wakefield pitched primarily out of the bullpen from 1999 to 2002.
Yeah,
and in 99 he had an ERA of 5.08. In 2000 it was 5.48. It got better the next 2 years, much better, and it was 281 in 2002, but Wakefield went to the bullpen because he wasn't pitching well. Dickey's pitching well.
Yes, but it also prolonged his career a bit longer too, right? Like, he still had another couple seasons, I believe, was it not? Like,
R.A. Dickey is 42 years old now?
Yes.
And Wakefield was retired at 44, but he was pretty terrible his last few years.
I don't think Dickey's done by any means. No way.
No, I think he's done if he wants to be done, but I think he can continue to pitch, but I don't think he needs to worry about prolonging his career, and I don't think he should be moved to the bullpen for a lack of performance because he's pitching very well.
Not because of lack of performance, Mike, but because of right now we're really lacking that long guy, and we've had a lot of problems with the bullpen this season, and it's hurt us.
Not because of the lack of a long guy.
No, because just of lack of a couple bad pitches, really.
Well, yeah, because the bullpen's been shaky, right? But I mean, the answer to that is not to move a very consistent, good starting pitcher to the bullpen. I mean, how does that help?
No, it's not going to help right away, and it's
not going to help at all. It takes away from your starting rotation.
Yeah,
which is far more important.
No, I agree. What if we were to bring up Drew Hutchison, though? So, like,
Drew Hutchison is not as good as R.A. Dickey.
He's not as good, but with Hutch, though, I think, like, with him, again, he can give a good couple innings, and all of a sudden there's that one inning again where he just could blow. It could be the first again, you know, it's back at that point. It could be the first inning or second inning. But it just seems like, I don't know, maybe, like, I heard that Hutch is having some good games down in Buffalo.
Oh, he's been great down in Buffalo. He's fantastic again tonight.
So that's the thing. Like,
but
maybe,
that's Buffalo.
I agree, it's Buffalo, exactly. But with him coming back up to the team, with him already being there and being a part of that team, and, you know, maybe it just might give him that little bit of confidence, or who knows that it's not that he's lacking because he's a major league pitcher, and they should all have confidence as it is.
You're trying to solve a problem by creating another
ideas,
problem.
Really. It's not going to solve any. I'm just trying to bring up ideas. I just thought of it. Like,
but I think the key thing is what you just said. It's not going to solve anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I mean, you're talking about shuffling pieces that don't need to be shuffled, right?
Yeah.
There's no reason to take R.A. Dickey out of the starting rotation. None whatsoever. There's no reason, it borders on negligence to bring Drew Hutchison up to pitch out of the bullpen, because then you're leaving yourself completely dry of any starting pitching depth in your minor leagues.
With R.A., how long would he need in between starts? Is it the same as other starters? Does he need
He can pitch on short rest every once in a while, but it messes with the rest of your rotation to do that.
Yeah, but with him, maybe a start and then maybe miss a start and do some bullpen time or something.
Why are you creating a problem with the starting rotation?
I'm not really creating a problem.
You absolutely are.
Time for you on the Jays talk.
Oh, well, don't. You know what? I don't need your help filling time for me with nonsense ideas. Don't feel like you need to come up with something to fill time. I can take care of that. No, there is zero reason to move R.A. Dickey to the bullpen. And, you know, you add to it the fact that, hey, move R.A. Dickey to the bullpen, bring him in the sixth inning. You got to bring Josh Tolian in the sixth inning. It just doesn't make any sense. Brian is in Innisfil. Hey, Brian.
First-time caller as well.
All right, welcome.
And I just want to start by saying, I got to admit, I jumped on the bandwagon there last August, like a lot of people did, I guess. But
nothing wrong with that.
But I'm really into it this year, and what's got me into watching the Jays, is listening to the Jays, catch most of the games on the radio, is your show and all the great information that comes out after the show.
Oh, thank you.
Fantastic information. And for a guy like me with a little knowledge, it's valuable knowledge. Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I'm a minor league umpire, so
cool.
I hope everybody doesn't tune out because I said that. But
What do you mean minor league?
Well, really minor league. I did a Ty Couch League game tonight, 10 and 11 year olds, and, you know, Bantam, and, you know, very minor league.
Oh, okay.
I teach the kids down here umpires. So it's, you know, all this talk about, the other night you had a lady on there that I wanted to do a shout out to her. What a sweetheart. She was concerned about the umpire that took one in a bad spot there. And if you recall that.
I do recall that, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was quite nice of her to be concerned about umpires. I've been there myself. But that started into that whole conversation again about robo-umps.
Yep.
So I want to ask you, how are you going to train a robo-ump?
You don't have to train robots.
No, you don't have to train anybody. You can't train a robot. It's a computer, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so everybody, you know, to say that the pitch tracker is all that the plate umpire does is such a gross oversimplification of that.
Oh, and I'm not suggesting that.
Yeah,
that it
anyway,
is.
I just want, like, how are you going to call catcher interference when the bat hits the catcher's glove?
Well, that's why you have a human being back there. He just doesn't get to call the balls and strikes.
Oh, you're suggesting to keep them there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not suggesting to take people off the field.
Okay, well, I think it was her that said about it.
Yeah, she said you should remove the home plate umpire because it's too dangerous.
Yeah, I'm worried about them getting hurt. You know?
Right.
Well, you know,
I'm not suggesting you take anybody off the field at all. I'm suggesting that the home plate umpire has a device either in his pocket or implanted somewhere on his person that will indicate balls and strikes and that he'll make the call. You know, it buzzes for a strike and he puts his fist up, or it buzzes for a ball and he doesn't. But other than that, he gets to do everything else. I think you need umps on the field.
Yeah,
I just don't think human beings are capable of correctly calling balls and strikes.
Yeah, because you got so many things that can happen down there, like interference, whatever, you know, interference on the catcher, the batter, the whatever, bunt on a bunt and all those things. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to talk about second base and a little bit from the perspective of where I'm at. I'm out here I'm here in Innisfil. I've been doing this for 10 years and trying to teach 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old kids how to umpire, which is a lot of fun. So this year they come and they're all asking me about the new rule at second base. And I'm struggling with explaining to them that there was no rule. There was no new rule. They're just applying the rule that's always been on the books, right?
Well, no, it's gotten a little bit pickier than it used to be, right?
Yeah.
There's now a dictionary definition of what is or isn't a bona fide slide.
Yeah. But beyond that, here's one thing I never hear you talk about, and Mike, fill me in, tell me I'm full of it here. I thought I heard it said that because there was so much crashing of the second baseman and shortstops at second base, that they started allowing them to not touch second base, and they called it on or near. Am I dreaming here, or was there not on or near second base, and they would allow that if they stepped over the base to get out of the way of that crashing slide?
Well, if you're an umpire, you, I'm sure, have heard of the neighborhood play.
Neighborhood play, that's what they're calling. That is a real thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm even arguing with my own fellow umpires about this one. I said, that's what they've been doing in the major leagues. It got so bad, you didn't even have to touch second base.
It's because it got so bad. I think it was just, it's been... You know, the neighborhood play has been there for 100 years. They've never, until this year, middle infielders have never been really required to touch the base when turning a double play. I've always thought they should have been, but umpires have said, look, it's okay if you're just in the neighborhood because we don't want you to get hurt. But now that the new slide rule is in effect, there's no more neighborhood play.
Right. So that, the neighborhood play does exist because I got umpires telling me it doesn't.
It's not on the books or anything. It's just a thing.
So I explained this to like a 15-year-old kid, right? You know, and they say, well, why did they make that rule? And I explained to them the neighborhood play. And even a 15-year-old kid looks at me and goes, well, that's stupid. Right?
Well, I've always thought it was too. And now it's gone.
Yeah, I think it's stupid too. And no, but I never hear, I guess I was just a little disappointed. I wanted to get 2 cents in on that because I never hear you bring that up everybody's so focused on the slide and what you can do and what you can't. No one ever talks about and that was kind of a consequence of the crashing the fielders, right?
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it's not like the neighborhood play was a rule that was ever on the books.
No, it never was, no. Breaking a rule that's on the books.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's something where they were worried about people getting hurt, so they let them get out of the way.
Right.
Yeah, but they can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted that little point mentioned somewhere online when we're discussing this the way we're calling second base now. That because to me, I thought that was ridiculous that it went to that point. You know, I don't know, I appreciate getting in, getting my two cents worth in as an umpire. And it's like I say, I'm trying to explain these complicated things to young kids. And half the time, I tell them, don't watch what's going on in the majors because it's too complicated.
Well, I'm glad you called, and I'm glad you got a chance to get get your points across. No problem. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. And we will continue to take your calls. The first pitch is set for 40 minutes from right now, 11:20 p.m. Eastern time. We will take your calls right up until 10 after 11 Eastern time. But before we take the next call, I want you to hear a conversation that I had earlier this evening with Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro. We asked callers prior to the interview to call in and give me questions that you wanted me to ask Mark Shapiro. And so I did. It's the rain delay program. Blue Jays and Rockies getting underway in 40 minutes. Here's my conversation with Mark Shapiro. Right now, we are very pleased to be joined by the Blue Jays president and CEO, Mark Shapiro. Thanks so much for doing this, Mark.
Sure.
I have been polling the fan base for the last 20 minutes for questions for you. But before we get to that, I guess just your thoughts on the state of the last couple of weeks. I mean, you go from a team on a roll winning 20 out of 28 to a team that's lost 6 of 8. These are the vagaries of 162 games, but what are you seeing?
Well, listen, anytime you're dealing in baseball, you know, you're balancing the emotions that you feel night to night, or, you know, in a smaller sample size, in this case, obviously the last, you know, 10 games, and that doesn't feel good. You know, you're not happy, you're not satisfied, you're disappointed. You know, and obviously if you're in this game for the right reasons, you're bitter because you want to win and you feel like we've got a talented team. That being said, you know, you look up at our position, both divisionally and in the wild card, and although I'd like to see us leading and not have to chase anyone, we're not in a terrible spot. I still feel like the upside of this team is still out there, that it's a team that still needs to be fueled by its offense, and that our offense, while it's been good for some periods, has not really clicked together for a sustained period of time. So I feel like our best baseball is probably still to come. And if that is truly the case, that we're in a decent spot, and we'll look up when it's all said and done and be happy where we are.
With Mark Shapiro, Blue Jays president and CEO, I want to get to these questions that the fans have asked me to ask you. And I just got one on the Twitter, which is pretty good question to start with, because Friday is your first Canada Day. and what are you looking forward to as far as that experience at the ballpark?
I guess I'm just looking forward to, you know, obviously one of the primary, you know, really attractive things in considering the opportunity was understanding that the team represents a country, not just, you know, a city. And obviously that's a unique position in the entire game. The pride that I've felt in this team, not just, you know, in one place, but across the country has been clear from day one. So seeing that really epitomized in one day felt, having the team go out and understand and wear special uniforms that are representative of that day and of that responsibility, and really feeling the excitement and energy around the city is something that that I'm excited to go through.
The Jays are in Colorado now. Troy Tulowitzki's homecoming after 10 years there, and he was saluted. It was really nice reception from the fans last night. Is how, I don't know if weird is the right word for it, but I mean, it's going to be the Cleveland Indians in town on Thursday and on Canada Day and this long weekend. How much are you looking forward to that?
Well, I mean, listen, I'm looking forward to it because I love the people there. They're people who I spent 25 years with and who I, you know, care about deeply. And the nature, I think, something that's hard to understand maybe if you're a fan and not working in the game is that, you know, a lot of what defines your career as a business are the relationships you develop. And those relationships, regardless of whether you change uniforms, persevere and exist when they're meaningful. And so I've got great friends that played for us in the past and worked for us in the past that are with other teams now. And now I'm one of those guys that moved on to another place. And
doesn't change how excited I'll be to see Tito or to see the Indians assistant GM Derek Falvey or Jason Barre or Mickey Callaway, all guys I have, you know, decades-long relationships with. That being said, when, you know, 105 hits and we, you know, take the field, there's no confusion at all. I mean, you want to beat them, if anything, because it's personal, just like a friendly rivalry, you want to beat them a little more. So I've got profound respect and appreciation and friendship for them, but don't mistake that. I want to beat the heck out of them.
Yeah, that's kind of the way it tends to work, that whole sibling rivalry sort of thing. Yeah, you love your brother, but when you get there out on the field, you definitely want to come out on top. All right, so moving along on these questions, somebody asked what the biggest difference between Cleveland and Toronto as far as the culture of the ball club is concerned, but my answer to that was, well, you're the president, so you kind of set the culture of the ball club, but what are the biggest differences between working here and working there?
Well, that's a huge question. I'm still learning as I work here. I would say this, the culture of the ball club here, you know, is something that neither Ross Atkins nor myself touched coming in. You know, it was an extremely successful, adrenaline-fueled, you know, team last year with a ton of talent on it. So while we've tried to do everything we can to support and where possible enhance, you know, we've also kind of just pulled back and said, hey, we're not going to impact the culture here unless, you know, someone wants us to or feels, you know, that's important. In Cleveland, you know, what runs through our veins, what runs through my veins is just part of that organizational fabric because it was, you know, 24 years of working in every capacity, player development, scouting, you know, everything there is to do. And so, you know, that organization, I think, represents, you know, the true, you know, focusing on what it means to be a true teammate, a professional, play the game the right way, play it with toughness, character, resilience, and perseverance, which is funny, when I watch the Blue Jays across the field and then being a part of them now are a lot of the same attributes that the Jays stand for.
With Mark Shapiro, Blue Jays president and CEO, we want to kind of rapid fire these questions at you and further to the whole Cleveland-Toronto comparison, a caller said that you he was very impressed with the changes that you made to Progressive Field under your reign with the Indians, and he said that he feels like the Rogers Center fan experience is not good, especially with the big crowds, long waits for concessions and for beers and stuff like that. I mean, again, we're in the infancy of your stewardship here, but are you looking at that, and are you looking to change anything?
Absolutely looking to improve fan experience in every single aspect, and certainly primarily through, you know, Rogers Center, and which is clearly, while still an engineering marvel, is really an outdated facility in many ways. So clearly, you know, I'm going to benefit from my experience, but also take on a very individualistic approach that is more reflective of, you know, Toronto and this market and the market in Cleveland. So that's coming. I would caution you on this, though. When you've got sellout crowds, which you do not have in Cleveland, by the way, and they're of the size they are here, which is not the size in Cleveland, you are always going to have an issue with waiting. You're always going to have an issue with, you know, bathrooms and concessions because there's no ballpark in the world or stadium in the world that's made to control a sold-out environment. Those are just environments that are almost impossible to plan for. So waits are frustrating. They're a reflection of the incredible support that we're enjoying right now, especially on weekend games. We will look to do everything we can to ease that, but that's going to always be a challenge when you have the level of support the Blue Jays have right now.
And speaking of that, you know, I think there's this myth out there that you've run into a few times that you set the payroll and you decide, you know, you want to, it's up to you how much money the Blue Jays spend on things. But given the attendance, and the Blue Jays attendance has been phenomenal this year, and assuming that this club stays in the race, it's only going to get better. And the TV ratings, which are the best in the major leagues, how do you think that's going to affect the plan going forward, the amount of money that you can spend on, that you can invest in the ball club, you being the Blue Jays going forward?
I think the greater challenge may be, you know, and it, you know, trades involve two parts. You know, one is, you know, taking on money, which I think there'll be an opportunity to do, and the other is giving up talent, which, you know, we have obviously for very good reasons. We have a farm system that is not extremely deep right now. And so, you know, we've got a challenge in that we've got a very, very robust trade market if you're a seller, not if you're a buyer, because there are very few teams that are clearly selling. And so it's a hyper-competitive environment that involves not only money, Mike, but players. And so, you know, I do think this, that Jose Bautista coming back, Brett Cecil coming back, you know, those are going to be two huge additions when they come back to this team. That being said, there's clearly the opportunity to improve it. We've spent considerable time already, and we'll continue to spend time trying to figure out how to improve this team, whether it be internally or externally.
As far as specifics, and I know you're not, we're not going to get in depth here, obviously, but I think the general feeling is starting pitching depth is still something you need. I mean, Drew Hutchison is there in Buffalo, but that's about it. So I guess a two-pronged question here. Is that your top priority, what you're going after, is starting pitching depth? And a couple of people have asked me as well. I answered this on the weekend, but I'm sure they'd love to hear it from you too. If starting pitching depth is an issue, why trade Wade LeBlanc?
So I would say, one, starting pitching depth is what keeps me up at night, not just starting pitching depth, but our starting pitching in general, because it's performed so well, actually so far above the projections that us or anybody else had, that in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, is this going to regress at some point? So starting pitching probably is an opportunity, particularly if Aaron Sanchez at some point goes back to the pen, then all of a sudden that really, you know, that improves our pen, but also creates another hole in our rotation. As far as Wade LeBlanc goes, I mean, listen, those are both contractual obligations as well as moral obligations, that when someone, you know, offers to bring a guy in AAA to the big leagues, you know, you want to be very cognizant of what it represents to you in depth. But when it was a minor league free agent, and he's your seventh starter, not your sixth, it's very difficult to keep that guy. But there are conversations had that, you know, that talk about reciprocity. Should we have the same situation with that team? And let's just say we didn't take that lightly.
All right. That's I'm sure that will calm the nerves of a lot of people. The starting pitching, you're right. The projections were that this was going to be the weak spot of this team, and it has performed just so far above what anybody thought. I want to ask you specifically about Marco Estrada, who appears to be the best free agent signing of the offseason, without question. He had two of the best playoff starts that the Blue Jays have ever had last year, and it still sort of seems like we didn't expect this from him. But what he's done so far this year, I guess, can you quantify just how incredible his season has been?
I don't know if you can quantify it. I mean, he's obviously, you can objectively, but an incredible competitor, understated, you know, person, great teammate, high character guy. And to me, just, you know, demonstrates the value of pitching with conviction, you know, with intent. You know, he throws a little bit above the hand in the strike zone. To pitch up in the strike zone, you need to pitch, you know, with a belief in that pitch. And execute that pitch with intent. And, you know, you're talking about a guy with a fastball that fringy average to a little above, and yet he gets, you know, he has both deception and tremendous competitiveness. So, you know, I respect the guy's competitive fuel, desire. I think he paces our club in a lot of ways. When he's out there, you can tell guys love working behind him. And he never gives too much credit to the hitter, man. You got to go out and beat him. He's not going to beat himself. So I love watching him compete. I love watching him play. Doing it from a distance last year was one of the reasons it was a priority for us to sign him, you know, this year.
And I think everyone is certainly applauding that signing. All right, as we wrap things up with Mark Shapiro, I want to give you a couple of rapid-fire questions. They're not yes or no's, but they're also not crazy in-depth, I don't think. But this is what a lot of people have been asking about. First of all, scheduling. Night games on Saturdays. It's something that we've really never had here in Toronto.
Yep.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, my thoughts are my very first inclination when I got here was it's something that we should consider. Looking at, you know, what Saturday day games have been here, it's hard to argue with their popularity and success. I would think we'd almost have to be in almost a down cycle to test night games on Saturday. But certainly, you know, I'd welcome fan feedback on that one. If it's something that people think, you know, they want, we'll probably go out and survey and talk to fans and try to get a feel sometime towards the second half of this season and see if that's something that fans want us to consider.
Another question was, what's the plan for Chris Colabello? He's due back in about a month.
Yeah, I mean, the plan is for him to get at bats and to see where the club is. So, you know, you can't forecast anything in a month. Mike, you don't need me to answer that. You can educate people to that for yourself.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen in 3 days, never mind in a month. Right. But I think there are people who are wondering if he would be welcomed back or not.
He's absolutely. If he's needed and he's able to contribute both those things, he would be welcomed back by this team.
What's the latest on Dunedin?
Still working. I feel, you know, positive, somewhat optimistic, but it's going to be, as I've said from day one, it starts with an overwhelming desire for us to remain there and for them to keep us there, but with the underlying understanding that it's a very complex deal with the city, county, and state, and it's not going to happen quick, and it's not going to be easy. So, but we're working hard to try to get that done.
All right, and the last thing for you, Connor Green gets promoted to AA New Hampshire. And this may be more of a Ross Atkins, Gil Kim sort of question, but I know that it's all under your stewardship. When we talked to Ross in the spring, he made mention that maybe there were some guys who he thought got pushed through the system a little bit too quickly. What are your thoughts about prospect advancement? Is it err on the side of too slow? I mean, I know the answer is let them dictate it, but how do you let them dictate it?
I think since Ross was a player under me in the farm system, I think he'd answer it the same way, that there is no way to answer that, that it's based upon the individual, and that if you have an individual approach and plan for every single player and a set of expectations for that player to meet that far transcend just numbers and objective performance, but also get into things like, does he have a strong foundation and work ethic? Does he understand his strengths and his limitations? Does he know how to make adjustments? And does he have the right foundation necessary to compete at the next level? If you do those things prior to being impacted by stats, then you have a chance to make the right decision at the right time. But I'll tell you what I tell all players, which are, you know, the best decisions we make in the front office are the ones that players make for us. Players move themselves. Players call themselves up. You know, their performance dictates ultimately what we do. If we have to make a decision on a player, it's got a very good chance to be a bad decision. So, you know, those are kind of the two answers I'd give to that. I'm going to sign off and let you guys get back to it. I've got my family in town for only 2 days, and I'm going to go back to dinner with my wife and daughter before I settle in and watch the game tonight.
Perfect. That was my last question anyway. So thank you for doing this. We appreciate you taking the time.
All right. My pleasure, Mike. Talk to you soon, man.
There he is, Mark Shapiro, the Blue Jays president and CEO. And that conversation from a little bit earlier tonight, and Mark Shapiro turned out to have a lot more time than he thought before he needed to settle in and watch the game. The Blue Jays and the Colorado Rockies in a hail delay, but the first pitch is scheduled for 22 minutes from now. We will have baseball in Denver tonight, and we will bring you every pitch. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, a little more of your phone calls as we get set for baseball in Colorado. It's the Rain Delay Program on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand, absolutely free.
And we begin hour five of the pregame rain delay program. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We'd be off the air right now for a normal home game, a 7 o'clock start. But the Colorado Rockies and the Toronto Blue Jays have not yet gotten started. The game is scheduled to begin in 19 minutes. It will have been a 2-hour and 40-minute rain delay when all is said and done. But Jay Happ and Eddie Butler getting set to go, and we will get you out to the ballpark shortly. But we've got time to take some more calls first on our rain delay program. And we're probably not going to have a very long Blue Jays talk when this game is over. So we'll get as many calls as we can in right now. Dave is in Sarnia. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Mr. Wilner. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Running on fumes right here, 5 hours in.
Yeah, this is the marathon. This is the day you're glad you ate your Raisin Bran or your Wheaties, for
sure. That's right. Nothing more fun than talking baseball on the radio, though, that's for sure.
5 hours. It's the endurance test, but you're the man to do the job. Mike, that was a great interview with Mr. Shapiro. Good inside imagery and background information about the greater business decisions that are taking place, which always fascinates me. There's a lot cooking behind the kitchen, you know, to make things work well for the Blue Jays.
Always has to be.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot to it. And as fans, we just show up at the park and enjoy it, take it all in. I had a question about, I've got some holidays coming up, and I'm going to be in Buffalo to see some games, and I wondered what players should I hone in on to keep an eye out for other than Hutchison. Is there any other players I should watch out for at the bat or out in the infield or outfield, that is? I'll just take a note of that.
Well, it depends on when you're there. Obviously, you know, Drew Hutchison, I don't know, is going to be there much longer. I would suggest that the one guy, if Dalton Pompey is not back yet from his concussion, the guy to watch is Jesus Montero. Montero was once one of the great young prospects in the game, and he struggled with performance issues, with weight issues, and he is out of chances right now and having a very nice year for the Bisons down there in Buffalo. Right now he's hitting .313, got the OPS over 800, and he's a guy who next year in spring training will come to camp out of options and likely to make the Jays or bust. And especially with the Blue Jays potentially losing Edwin Encarnacion and Justin Smoke, there may be a DH opportunity for Jesus Montero to be a big league ball player full time next year. And he's still young and he's still incredibly talented. So he's the one guy I would keep my eye on.
Okay. Well, that's exciting. I wrote that down. I'll do a little bit of internet information on him as well. Buffalo's got to be one of the nicer AAA facilities to see, or parks. I've yet to be there, so it's something to look forward to. Of course, I always try to get to the Rogers to see the Blue Jays play. And the other question pertained to the AAA. I just wondered, are they working on or experimenting with any rules, policies, / technology that they feel might be projected into the major leagues? And this is sort of a rain delay kind of question, but I just wondered, do they use AAA as a league to try different rules, policies, like I said, or?
No.
No.
No, they don't. Occasionally, I mean, like pitch clocks and stuff might start there, but no, very rarely do you see stuff like that. Like, you know, not like the NHL uses the AHL as sort of a proving ground for their new rules. But then again, the NHL changes its rules a heck of a lot more often than Major League Baseball does. I hope you enjoy it, Dave. You'll love Coca-Cola Field in Buffalo. Make sure you try the onion petals and the Logan Berry at the concession stands. And if you feel like it, can't go wrong with a fried bologna sandwich either. Thanks, Dave. Try to get to a couple more before we have to go. And up next is Scott in Toronto. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Mr. Wilner. Going 5 hours on strong tonight. Great show.
Just into the fifth hour. It's only been 4:05, but we're in the fifth hour, but thank you.
Just another day at the office for you.
You bet.
So, a really great interview with Mr. Shapiro there. You know, I really like him. You know, he seems like he takes a well-balanced, strategic approach. So, like, I'm really looking forward to see what he's going to do with the Jays. But my question for you is, I heard from time to time on prime time in the fall that Paul Beeston was still involved with the Jays organization. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, I haven't heard much since. And, you know, have you heard or you know if he's involved at all with the day-to-day activities with the Jays at all? Or does he have any, you know, what extent he's still within the organization?
Well, he still comes to every game. He sits in his box. He's got his, I believe he's still got an office there. And he's there to kind of lend a helping hand to Mark Shapiro to be that sort of president emeritus, if you will. If Shapiro has any questions, if he feels like he needs any guidance, he can lean on Paul. But I don't believe Beeston has, you know, a quote unquote title or an active role or anything like that. He's just there to give advice and to be there if anybody needs him.
Yeah, I think that's pretty incredible when you have somebody come in, take over a company, and, you know, still wants, you know, somebody in the past there helping out and, you know, use whatever for insight. Just my last question for you. What do you think about Stamkos coming to Toronto this winter? I'm going to hang up and listen to you.
All right. Thanks. You're not going to have to listen to anything. This is not the right forum to ask that question. We got time for one or two more calls before we go to Denver. Let's go to Russ in New Jersey. Russ, welcome to the pregame show, the rain delay program, whatever we're calling it now.
From the Yankee game right now.
Really? It's over? That's awesome.
It was nice to see them lose. But the thing I was thinking about you tonight, because you would have enjoyed it, you know, a bank took me to the game, and the banker tells me I'm bringing my father-in-law. And he was an ex-Blue Jay. And I go, who is that? And he goes, Paul Mirabella's coming to the game with us.
Wow.
So it was, you know what? He was there for 2 years, but he had so many great stories. You know, he only was 2 years in Toronto. You know, we spoke about Bobby Maddock, and he had good stories about Babe Romanchik and different stuff. And, you know, he said, Toronto, I could walk around with $400 coming out of my pocket. No one would take it. I said, times have changed a little, but I think you call it Trader Vic's. He used to get gift certificates if you were a player at a game.
That's right.
He great stories. And, you know, the most interesting thing he told us when he was on the Yankees the day Thurman Munson died, and, how the team was just, like, totally distraught. He says, for the rest of the year, we just went through the motions. We just, you know, he was, you know, Thurman, he said, was a tough guy, but he was a gamer. And he said that was, like, probably one of the hardest days. But great, great stories about, you know, bringing up names like Domiso and Roy Howell and speaking about all Danny Ainge and when he came to play and he knew he was young. But it's a lot of fun times. I was thinking that not many people remember those days, but I know you do.
Oh, absolutely. I remember Paul Mirabella fondly. Have left arm, will travel. Was Paul Mirabella, one of the great old-time Blue Jays from back in the day. Hopefully yesterday, Russ, you got to hear the interview with Dave McKay that we played in the pre-game show.
I didn't, but I remember our second baseman in those early years. And the funny thing was, I have an album of pictures. If you remember in the old days, they used to do Bellevue Photo Camera Day.
Absolutely, Bellevue Photo Camera Day.
And you were allowed on the field, and they would have these blue, like, mats. The players would sit there, and I still have my picture when I was about 7 with Steve and Mayberry and Barry Bunnell, and I don't remember, but Dave McKay, yeah, he was a good hitter. We spoke about Bob Baylor. I think he hit 300, though, one of those first seasons.
Baylor hit 300 in 1977. Dave McKay was not a good hitter.
He wasn't.
No, he most certainly was not.
No, but then he went to Oakland right after that, correct?
Yep. Yeah, right. And then he became their first base coach for a while, and now is the first base coach with the Diamondbacks. Russ, thanks for the call. Appreciate the memories. Thanks to everyone who called, and apologies to those of you to whom we could not get. A great, very participatory rain delay program. Couldn't have done it without you. Taking calls for 2.5 hours on the radio is not an easy task. You guys made it easy. The phone lines were always full. We will have Blue Jays talk when the game is over. It's not going to be long, I promise. But if you're still around at 3:00 in the morning, then we will we'll get a chance to talk to you then. Quick update from the St. Louis Barn Grill Out of Town scoreboard. Cubs and Reds are tied at 2. Joey Votto just came up with runners at first and second and one out in the bottom of the 13th and lined into a double play with Travis Wood, the left-handed pitcher for the Cubs, playing left field. So they're moving to the 14th. The Cubs and the Reds are tied 2-2. They haven't even gotten started yet in Denver, but they're going to soon. When we come back, the starting lineups, the mound matchups, the first pitch, the Blue Jays and Rockies are coming up It's the pregame show now that there's going to be a game on the Sportsnet Radio Network.